And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's Bathrop Spears Broadsides, the Sunday morning show. Stay with us for a special, long and interesting discussion involving Tony Madrigal and the Human Rights Organization. And then at noon, the concerns about censorship, exclusion, confidences, and the brouhaha around the issue of producer, that's the word, Becky Johnson, will be coming up, and the questions of public policy in the community. So stay with us. Today is July 10th. And that was Greedo Serpentino. Sorry about the volume there. I think we're okay. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Getting a little rocky start this morning, but I'm starting. Greta Serpentino, I call it downtown, but it's actually 13 cholos, or, what, 13 cholos. And that's a song I really like, and I hope you like it too. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides, and I'm going to begin today with some sort of review of stuff from the streets, which is really a key issue on this show, concerns about reports from poor and homeless people who are outside and facing what to some is, an intellectual issue like the sleeping ban. I guess, you know, that's going to be an issue later in the show as we hear Tony Madrigal talk to the Human Rights Organization at 10 o'clock. I'm going to try to adhere to that timeline pretty quickly since the interview has been put off twice already. It's not really an interview. It's a taped recording of a public meeting that the Human Rights Organization had with Councilmember Madrigal about 2 weeks ago at Sin Fronteras. And we're going to be hearing that. Also hoping to hear from Patches up in Mendocino at the Medical Marijuana Patients Union. That's probably around 11:30. And then at noon, as I was mentioning earlier, going to continue the discussion and get my producer Becky Johnson's side of the story on concerns that numbers people in the community have raised around issues of confidentiality, issues of associations with right-wing groups, things of that sort that we began to talk about on Thursday, and actually spent quite a bit of time airing some of those concerns, and now she'll have a chance to respond at noon to that, which I think isn't just a personal internal dispute, but it's an issue of public policy, and I think that's why it's worth airing on the air, and that's why I'm doing it. So let's begin by, I'm going to pass on to you a phone call I got. It was at 6:30 in the morning on Wednesday morning, a report about from a woman in a vehicle. And she had some views she wanted to express, and I'm putting them out. And here they are.
It's July 6th. I got a knock on the van, my van. I'm sitting with a friend up. And it just seems to happen in the summertime to me. I just wanted to let you know that Mike Rockin is a big fat liar cat. 3 days after a show, he said that they only come out and bug people. I guess homeless is whatever they consider homeless, because they refused to check my ID to see my home address. I guess a homeless person told me that that's what they do, because they don't want to list me as homeless. They just want me to be homeless. And I got a knock on the van by an officer who did not identify himself, in a plain white truck with just the seal of the police on it, telling me I had to move along or he would cite me for camping. Well, I decided to take my headphones off and crawl up front and confront this officer when he came back in 20 minutes to move me along. And lo and behold, he came, he pulled up, he saw me sitting in the car, and drove away. I was parked in front of a business, actually two businesses on Darwin Street. It was 5:45 in the morning. I can't imagine who called, since all the residents were still asleep. So I thought I would just call and inform you of this practice. This is like the third time in the last couple of years that I've been swooped up with the homeless. And I find it really interesting that the City of Santa Cruz Police Department doesn't want to see my proof of residence. Perhaps the next time Mr. Rotkin comes on your show and says, oh, they only come out when they're called on, you can tell him of this July 6th event and ask him, what is the plain white truck without lights on top of it, with just a simple Santa Cruz police seal on it. And, oh, by the way, the officer was dressed in community service blue, not their navy blue. Anyway, I'm just out here watching what's happening, being harassed on the public street with your swooped up with your compadres, which I'm starting to feel a great amount of sympathy for. And you can either get the word out there or you can tell the big fat liar cat he lies, of course. And I know this is a Huff meeting day, so I hope you had a good meeting, and I hope you get this message. And I'm out there. I'm in the security business, so I'm out there getting a lookout. And since I have to do the move along on private property, I happen to know some of the rules that go along with that. And I just don't believe Santa Cruz Police Department or Mike Ruckin is actually following the law to the full. Anyway, good luck, and thank you for listening, Robert. Bye.
Yeah, that was a message I received 4 days ago, Wednesday the 6th. Unfortunately, you know, she's wrong in one sense. The police are following the law. That is to say, the absurd sleeping ban law that makes it illegal for people to sleep in a vehicle or outside on any public property after the hour of 11 o'clock at night until 8:30 in the morning. And what she's pointing out is that Rotkin's claim that police are only enforcing on complaint and only enforcing or in, you know, high use areas where there's some sort of protest going on is, as far as she's concerned, not true. And also that I've looked for documentation on that claim by Rotkin, and I haven't been able to get it. I mean, he simply takes the word of the police department that that's happening. And frankly, that's not good enough for me. It's not that I necessarily think specific officers are lying, but I think the police department has an interest in keeping the sleeping ban as a, quote, useful tool for their enforcement. I mean, police like to have laws, many of them. Some don't, but I think the, you know, it's fair to say that often the official police position is the more measures that give the police the power to do the job, and indeed it's a difficult job in terms of looking for real criminals, the better. And, you know, it's nice if you're able to walk into a person's campsite at night and ask them questions and search them if you're looking for a criminal suspect, even if you don't have probable cause or reasonable suspicion, because you'll always have probable cause that there's a sleep crime in progress late at night if a person's in a bag snoring, won't you? And that's going to be an issue that will be coming up again in about 20 minutes of this Human Rights Organization's discussion with Tony Madrigal, and you're invited to listen in on that. A couple of quick announcements and corrections. There's actually a sleeping ban forum coming up. I had announced it for Thursday at the SEIU Union HQ up on Mission and Locust, but I learned from Tony Madrigal, no less, and then that was confirmed by union activist Tim Ahern, that the meeting is actually on Wednesday. So I'm actually going to be able to go to that meeting. I would have been in a conflict because I do my show between 6 and 8 on Thursday evenings. But I'll be able to go to the Wednesday meeting, and you can too. I understand it's open to the public. It's at Mission and Locust at the SEIU Union headquarters, and it's going to be a forum on the sleeping ban because activists from the Human Rights Organization, the same activists who you're going to hear talking with Tony Madrigal, have gone to the SEIU. They're also going to the Green Party. They went to the Homeless Services Center, and they're looking for support for ending the sleeping ban and supporting legal and political challenges to that rather infamous law that I, of course, have talked about. Maybe it's tens of thousands of times now. Certainly must be thousands of times. I've used that phrase over the last 10 years on this station. And, of course, you're tuned to 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org, in case you don't know. If you want to get on the phone and get in touch with us, you can, with me, I should say. I'm alone in the studio at the moment. And the number is easy. It's 831-427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz, or 3772. 427-3772. And we only have one line in, so if you can't get in and things are heating up, you're welcome to jump on the chat room. And I promise I'm going to be trying to keep an eye on the chat room. That's the computer monitor here, so I can see questions people have, comments they're making, and try to pass those on to guests in the studio when and if they show up. I'm hoping to get a couple guests in addition to Becky Johnson at noon, hoping to get some other folks too. But it may just be me, and hopefully getting these long-delayed and much-promised, often-promised tapes out so you can hear them. I did get a phone call from Tony Madrigal two, in fact, in the last week, which asked me, encouraged me not to play the interview because he felt it was incomplete, didn't include his own subsequent phone conversation with a Human Rights Organization member, and we're going to be talking about that too. He's also been invited to come to the studio and actually do an interview here and comment on the tape, or even I would prefer to have him live, frankly, although I want to give equal weight to the Human Rights Organization and their work and the kinds of questions and inquiries they're making. They're proceeding methodically to try to get some small changes made as well as to raise the broader issue. We'll be talking about that again, as I said, at 10, or you'll be actually hearing it. I'm not going to be talking about it. You'll be able to listen to it. Let's hear a little street stuff from the last SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, shindig. Actually, it's the one before the last. We had our 75th week of continuous week-by-week performance on Wednesday night in front of New Leaf. That's open to anyone to come and play. It's also a point for people to exchange literature and information. There's occasionally a soapbox there. There's a honk if you want to get out of Iraq option for those driving by. There's free food. It's really quite an event, and it's roused community spirit there at that time, I think, quite a bit. It has not, however, of course, provided us, I think, with the kinds of protections we need for street performers generally, who are still face, I think, pretty methodical and persistent harassment on the streets, depending on the inclinations of the police officer in question. And I've been getting, you know, ongoing reports about that. Talked to the marimba band folks, one woman representing that group, or a member of that group who was actually an original member of SAFE way back when. And she talked about how Bechtel was moving them around. That's Officer Pam Bechtel in front of the Cinema 9 some month or two back, I think it was. The marimba band that plays on Saturdays, claiming then that there was excessive noise, that there had been a complaint. I talked about that on the air. The downtown ordinances are a real problem because they give so much power to the police and to merchants and to hecklers, or people who are simply don't want to see performers down there. And police don't say, is there really unreasonable noise? They just say, oh, there's been a complaint. That's sufficient. And, of course, that's not sufficient, but most people don't want to risk their instruments and risk a fine to go to court to say, look, it's not unreasonable noise, and here are five witnesses that say it wasn't, because the police have so much on-the-spot power under those circumstances. So, let's hear a little of that. I should say a little of SAFE Event 74 and some of the conversations that came up there.
Oh, 05, at SAFE Event, is it 74 or 75, I don't know, but it's June 29, 2005. And again, I'm having a brief word with Hawk. Hawk, we talked before, but unfortunately the tape wasn't working, so hi, greetings.
Mary?
No.
Mary.
Hey, Mary. My memory might get jogged in a moment, but Hawk, you were saying that a man named Mike,
Yes. Not
our own long, tall Mike, or our musical Mike, but another Mike, got actually struck by a police officer in a confrontation.
Yeah.
Are you pointing at him?
No, just a little harassment there, it looked like.
Both and a police officer. We're just sort of wandering by. Are they harassing or are they joining?
They said to move the area just so it doesn't get blocked.
Well, they made them move the keyboard here. Shocking. So this happened about a week ago, Sunday, you say?
On Sunday.
And it happened at San Lorenzo Park on the hill overlooking the duck pond?
Yeah. There was four gentlemen that was taken to jail.
All right, U.S. out!
There was four gentlemen that were taken to jail, but one, in fact, didn't have nothing visible or anything like that. He had his backpack sitting there, and the officer ran up and grabbed it. So he jumped up and grabbed it back off the officer, and a tug-of-war ensued. Ripped the backpack, then he pulled out his nightstick and proceeded to beat the man because he wouldn't let go of the nightstick, or the backpack. You know?
Did it cause some injuries?
Oh, yeah. He has a broken wrist. The arm area.
Which wrist? The right wrist?
It's the left wrist, because he went to block his face, and he got it in the same side of the eye. You know, his eye's all bloody, and there's some damage done to his eye and damage done to his head. It's all broke.
He was charged with?
Drunk in public.
And was he drunk in public?
No.
You know,
because I was there. right before it happened. And just because he gave him, pursued a conflict over the backpack, they arrested him.
And you say there were numerous other witnesses?
Yes, there was. There's a whole park full there.
And you say that there's kind of an intensification of unattended property confiscations by police?
Yes, Wednesday and of that day, too, they were going around with a van and they were going around with a pickup truck confiscating people's bikes, confiscating people's backpacks, blankets that are unattended. You know, people do have to go to the bathroom, and if nobody's watching their stuff, who is? You know, the cops? No, they come by and they steal them. Why not?
Have you had experienced this yourself?
No, not myself, but I've watched them go past, you know, and pick up stuff and put it in the truck.
And the last time you saw that was a week ago on a Wednesday last?
Yeah.
And it was in San Lorenzo Park?
Yep.
You think there's a particular focus on the park?
Yeah, it seems like they're trying to get rid of the homeless altogether out of the park.
They're trying to clear the drugs out.
Say that again, Mary.
They're trying to clear the drunks out. I got arrested Friday at San Lorenzo Park.
You were arrested?
Yeah.
What were you arrested for?
Open container warrants.
And what was the result of this arrest? Were you taken to jail or?
I went to jail 5 days.
And 5 days?
Yeah.
Did it take 5 days to get to court? Were you held on bail? What was the deal?
Well, they don't have court Saturday and Sunday, and so when
So, is this your first experience with Santa Cruz Jail, or?
No, but now I'm code 4, so it's all good.
What is code 4?
It means I don't have any more warrants.
There you have it. Education as we go. Any other notes from the street, Mary, that you want to pass on?
Smoke more pot, drink less.
Hawk, any comments from you?
None at this moment.
Well, we're talking to Sharon Pate, the notorious sleep criminal. Sharon, you often show up at Huff meetings, but this seems to be one of your first times at a safe event.
Yeah, I think so. I was down here once before, but I don't think it was safe.
Safe gets here every Wednesday.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah, I was here once quite a while ago.
What are you doing? Looks like you're giving out flyers or something?
I am like your absolute worst flyer person.
How so? Tell us about your bad flyer behavior.
It's just that I have this phobia about approaching people. It's like I'm...
Get your flyers here.
I can't walk up to anybody and do it.
You'll get better. And the guitar is a strumming.
Hey.
Oh.
You say you want a revolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world. You tell me.
We're talking with
Jeremy.
And Jeremy, what happened?
I was sitting down on a bench, and they accused me of being under the influence, and they searched me.
And where was this?
It was on Hippie Corner, or Punker's Corner.
And how long ago was this?
And they fucked me up on that street too, man. Like, about 2.5 hours ago.
And who were the police who did it, do you know?
Anytime. I don't know. They all look the same to me. I hate to be racist and all, but those cops look all the same to me.
Now, we're talking about police in dark blue or light blue?
I believe it was a dark blue.
And what kind of a conversation preceded their contact with you? How did it go?
Not too well, man. They seemed to be hostile, almost as if they weren't native to the same area I was.
Now, are you a local yourself?
Born and raised in downtown. I grew up in a bus.
Here you go, man.
Over by where the talkery is now. There used to be a whole bunch of benches and, well, I don't know if you remember where the old hippie corner was or whatever.
Oh, yeah. That's what used to be the Cat Garden Pacific, right across from the old Cat and Canary.
Exactly.
So, did you get a citation? What was it? What did they do?
They couldn't prove that I was under the influence of anything, even though I was stoned.
I'm drinking here. And so, were you the? Was anyone else cited or hassled?
Yeah, but they didn't care that much either.
Now, is this sort of business as usual up at? I take it this is the Union Grove Music Corner we're talking about.
It seems to be that way. Because day in and day out, I've seen huge groups of them together, not really accomplishing anything.
You mean by police, or you talk about police officers or people on the corner?
The police.
Here, here. Well, Jeremy, anything you want to add between bites of this tasty, is it tasty soup?
It's delicious, and I'm glad that I live in Santa Cruz. If I lived somewhere else, I'd be hungry.
Thank you.
All the time, can't get no worse. I admit it's getting better, a little better. Since you've been mine, that seems so much better. All the time, it's better.
Talking to the notorious bicycle lover, Michael Posner. What's happening?
Actually, I love humanity, and humanity is much more accessible and happier on bicycle.
Now, I've been trashing poor Tony Madrigal quite repeatedly for his sellout on the sleeping ban issue, but what's your evaluation of the current city council? You've always been on pretty buddy-buddy terms with some of those folks. Well, give us some positive comments. Throw some light on this gang of rascals.
Well, they're in a hard spot. I can't say they're doing all that great, but they are in a hard spot. I mean, they're totally broke, so they're acting out of fear, which is not a good...
Totally broke.
Yeah, the city's broke, and it's being squeezed by the government.
Dick Wilson is now walking around in rags. Is that what's happening?
Well, relative speaking to his community, yes, he's walking around in rags.
Poor Dick Wilson. I feel very sympathetic.
I'm not saying that... We should feel a little bit bad about what's happening, because what's happening is the federal and state governments are trying to force all the cities to whore out to corporations to get money, like AKA the Dream Inn and all that, you know. And Santa Cruz actually isn't going along as much as other cities, and therefore it has less money at the moment. So it is, you know, like Capitola has money because it's all about the mall, you know, and Watsonville's doing anything it can to whore itself out for money. So
what about that rail bike path we heard about some time back? What's happened to that?
It's moving forward. I'm proud to say it looks like the county officials are going to buy the corridor by the end of the year. And then we have to start building the trail. So, and Sam Farr is getting money for it. It's very romantic and all that. So I think beating the shit out of Highway 1 widening has really helped us in terms of getting human scale space. And then, so that's what's happening.
You still persist in your bizarre hostility toward internal combustion engines on the highway?
Well, yeah, absolutely. They're bad for everyone. They're raising the temperature of the world and, you know, getting people to work 30% of their lives, support their car habit, and driving around.
Bizarre notion about this being a class issue. Would you like to comment on that again?
Well, yeah, it's definitely a class issue, and in as much as the middle class is disappearing, it has to do with cars, to the point where the middle class is so tied to their cars that that's part of how they get trapped and messed around with. You know, I mean, people spend 30% of their time working for their cars, and then they say, "Well, I gotta have my car," you know, because I gotta get places. But of course, you know, if they weren't spending all that money on their car, they'd have time to hang out and talk to nuts like Robert, and, you know, ride around and enjoy life more.
I'll overlook that last comment.
Well, no, I mean, that's part of my enjoying life.
you're entitled to the reasonable enjoyment of your property. As Michael Rotkin said to the people that wanted to fine the partygoers in his latest Party at Your Peril legislation, which you may recall passed City Council yesterday.
Yeah.
Second reading.
Yep, Santa Cruz is definitely pulling ranks towards everyone's, you know, trying to...
Put rank measure, is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't know. I don't have that much sympathy for the college students, but it does. I can see why it does strike me as a bit against... it's definitely messing with people's rights a little bit.
That Brommer Broadway bike path, what's been happening with that?
That's on the way back burner. See, part of the city being broke is that the Public Works Department doesn't have any money to do anything. So it's taken them more than, it's almost 2 years now just to paint a stripe on Soquel that some people did in the middle of the night without any money from the government at all.
Some guerrilla types that you may in fact be aware of?
Yeah, I mean, it's pathetic that they don't have any money. But on the other hand, they also don't have any money for car projects. So, you know, in a way, maybe it's okay. It's kind of an interesting thing to watch and say, like, well, in a sense, it's like a test case for whether the government makes any sense. Because they're broke. Are things better? Are things worse? I mean, in some ways they're better, in some ways they're worse. You know, like, I don't know. It's a kind of interesting thing to see. I mean, a lot of the people I work with are really pro-government because, you know, they're anti-corporate, they're pro-government. But me, I kind of like watch and wait and see how it all works out. I mean, I don't know about government America. It sort of depends on the week, you know.
Well, you better make up your mind. When you come up with some clear ideas, get back to us.
I have some clear ideas about what our society should look like, and we'll see if the government goes along.
Thank you, Micah Posner.
Thanks.
And we approach the drummers to get the inside dope here. What's your name, sir?
Robert Bob.
Robert Bob, what's the story with the drumming now? Is there a difference between summer drumming and winter drumming? Have you grown as a drummer?
All drumming's the same. Just keep the beat, that's all. Yeah. Sure, I've grown, maybe. Maybe not.
I've grown tired, perhaps?
Yeah, I've grown tired. That's about right.
Things are getting pretty desperate here as I interview the fence posts, the lanterns, and the trees. Thank you, Bob.
You're welcome.
And now, as long-awaited and long-promised, here's the Human Rights Organization talking with Tony Madrigal and some other folks also who've joined the meeting in Sin Fronteras. It's fairly lengthy, so grab yourself a cup of coffee or a cup of tea or whatever you like to sip and prepare. This is about a 45-minute interview. I will be interrupting it if there are phone calls, probably, and I may interrupt it for some commentary, but I'm generally going to let it speak for itself and let the participants speak for themselves. After that, we can discuss it in more detail. Again, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse. If you want to leave a message off-air for me, it's 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I'll get back to you.
June 26, 1 o'clock, meeting with Tony Madrigal of the Human Rights Organization and one representative from the Brown Berets.
I don't know if you know how our home care council works. We have three meetings. My name is Josue. I'm a member of the Watsonville and the Santa Cruz Brown Berets. And Bernard approached us a couple meetings ago regarding this whole sleeping ban thing and their initiative on it. And I think that the sleeping ban is not so much, it's a human thing, you know, you have a right to sleep, you know, and if you take that away, you know, you're being responsible for degrading the health of people who, like, don't have a place to stay, you know, so it's your responsibility. You can't, if the city can't, like, can't afford to provide a place to sleep, people should be able to have blankets, you know. Number one. Second of all, seeing it from you said a Latino perspective, that type of thing is like, you know, it's very much like the plight of migrant workers when they're not sure where they're gonna sleep, you know. And it's not so much that they don't have, but like, you know, day by day, it becomes more difficult, you know, because the whole uncertainty of it, you know, and it has a lot to do with homeless people in Santa Cruz, you know, and as well as Watsonville, because it's pretty big there. So, like, you know, that whole thing is just the humane aspect of it, who have a right to sleep, you know, and I think it's just, this policy that the city has about harassing people for trying to get their rest, you know, for trying to be alive, I think this is it's very, very, very bad. And you know, that's my little stance on it. So, yeah.
So, do you have a farm worker background?
Hmm?
Were you a farm worker when you grew up?
No.
Your family?
I think my dad is a farmer for me and up the north coast.
Yeah? Okay.
Good kid.
I grew up as well. I was born and raised in Turlock. You know where that is?
Yeah.
And so I grew up as a farm worker in the Central Valley. We did tree fruit, not really grow crops. Yeah. And so that's my experience with picking peaches, cherries, grapes, and knocking almonds. Mm-hmm. You know what we call them, almonds?
Yeah.
You heard about that? We call them, you know what we call them, almonds?
How's that? Yeah.
Oh my gosh, you're recording the joke.
He's pretty much in agreement on points that we've been making for a year.
I'm going to interrupt the tape briefly so people can know whose voices they're listening to. The voice you just heard, your voice you're now hearing is Bob Patton's. The voice you just heard was Tony Madrigal, the council member. Bob is a member of the Human Rights Organization.
About particularly the sleeping part of the camping ban, I would like to just take a moment and say we appreciate what you did during the election time. You say you're open, you were willing to talk about open to ending the sleeping ban, and we noted that. So we want to thank you for that. We're taking this opportunity to go ahead and bridge that gap there and have you respond more, get more information from you on those points. And we did, I'm sure you've seen this before already, and we just want to refer to these five points in particular that were on the lawsuit that was presented to you or to the city council. And just a brief: suspend the sleeping camping ban, dismiss any and all present past citations, designate no less than 40 parking spots during the night as safe sleeping zones, setting up either the Benchlands, Harvey West, or De La Vega Park as emergency campgrounds for vulnerable women, children, and elderly. And five, mandate additional training and direction to the Santa Cruz PD. And there's a line or two in each one of those. If you haven't already studied that, that's basically some of the items we've been, and I know several copies have been sent to the both the city council and to, I'm pretty sure I sent you at least one. Now that,
did you keep it?
Yeah, oh, please. And if you had any comments right now on it.
No, go ahead.
This is going back a little bit. This is part of a flyer that was done in 04. And this defines some of the camping and campground and shelter expansion, city camping options, and it lists 13 different possible options, of which, just to save time, I won't mention them all.
Mm-hmm.
But this is just some of the research we've done over the years and others have done that support these efforts. Let's see. Donna, did you get a copy of this? I can hand it over to you. These are what I'm pointing out to me right
options
now. The
there
ones on the bottom, not the top. The top is...
Hey, Jose, what's your name?
Monroy.
Monroy?
Mm-hmm.
Monroy.
And then here is the campground options named by place and space. And this was the exceptions to outdoor camping and such.
Okay.
So if I could leave you with that, there's some extraneous stuff on there too. It might be good reading to you or not. I just want to give you some chance to respond to, not just keep pushing documents to you, but often if somebody wants stuff, and that's just, like I said, some side thing. It just happened to be on two-sided flyers that we'd like to put out.
Okay. Use both sides of the paper?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. So any comments from you now?
I'm just listening.
Okay.
I'm just listening at
this is kind of an expansion on this one of two. Okay, that's just the part I needed here. Kind of talks a little bit more about Kate Wells' the initial suit that she put in. And hard to read it upside down, so I'll put it upside down. Yeah. The suspend the sleeping blanket ban. So it's the basically this 5 points restating it, dismiss all, setting up the bench land. Yeah, that's, I'm repeating myself on that, even though I set that in as a note.
Should I go into what we want from Tony?
And then what I did want to offer is additional information on the Pottinger. I always hear about this and referred to it in one of the letters. The Pottinger decision that took place in Florida. As actually the decision was done in 92, but in 1998 was when the agreement came about. And what happened with the agreement, an agreement enforced by federal courts that banned police from approaching homeless people for life-sustaining misdemeanors, such as camping, sleeping, being in a park after hours, etc. And then what I want to show you here with this is that our sleeping ban, here it is, word for word, or the camping ban with the sleeping ban in it, does all of those things. So if this was Florida, we'd already be under a federal court's supervision. Second document when it comes to the court cases, which is also, I think, mentioned in the letter from the Human Rights Organization, was the St. Louis situation. Now, this is just current St. Louis situation. I'm trying to find the line. They were, by court, the court ordered them to stop ticketing and arresting homeless people within the city limits. And the case is still going on. One, two, three. And here's three pages on that for your reference. And those right now are the two main cases that we're working on. There are other options that people can take in California. The necessity plea is one of them. The necessity defense is one of them. I'm sorry I don't have that particular information with me.
Well, are you familiar with the necessity defense, Tony?
What are you talking about?
It just basically is that a homeless person, you know, gets a ticket for...
And this is Bernard Klitzner speaking.
You know, a sleeping ban or a camping ban type of violation. They can use the necessity defense. You know, saying, well, you know, I had nowhere to go, you know.
Well, I'll get it.
But however, the problem with it is that these cases are infractions. And you can't, so a homeless person, you know, wouldn't have access to a lawyer, and you can't get a public defender for an infraction. Therefore, a homeless person was not going to have the resources or the knowledge to know how to fight that successfully, because it's just overwhelming. I heard there's... What is there, a 5-6-prong defense on that? I mean, it's overwhelming. You have to really know what you're doing. So it's just basically a useless item. So one of the things that we would like is...
What's the useless item? The infraction?
Pardon?
What's the useless item? The infraction? What's a useless item?
It's a useless... it's a useless defense to a homeless person as we now know it.
Mm-hmm.
So... One of the things we would like is for police people not to give tickets where they know that night is full. And that's probably every night. Because there's just so limited spaces, legal limited spaces in the city. Like I hear right now, there's only 40 legal limited spaces. And we know that there's a lot more homeless people than 40.
Would you like the police to not give tickets at night where
they know that...
Where they know... Say,
there's no place for them to go.
These are limited Muslims?
Yeah. So...
Hold on.
Okay.
Let's saying right now there's about 40 legal limit spaces?
About 40, around 40 spaces, legal spaces.
Where you can park all night?
Oh, no. 40 places to sleep, like I understand the interfaith satellite program.
Oh.
That kind of thing. Just some legal programs. Mm. There's just not many spaces available.
So legal limited place, I'm going to call them places. Places where people can stay.
Yeah.
Okay. Where? I'm just going to put our home there.
Actually, aren't some of those churches technically violating the ban because they're providing people and places in there?
I don't, that might be true, but I don't think we should bring that up here.
So you're saying some of them are like churches, shelters?
Yeah, I mean, basically, according to the stats we have, and this is older ones, Santa Cruz, 15 to 2,000 people experience homelessness in any one night. And in the winter, provide winter 39 spaces through the spring through fall. And then there are not other spaces.
When the shelter opens, though, yeah. I think it gives you, an additional 100, maybe 110, something like that.
And, if I can suggest a moratorium on getting homeless people tickets during this time, and what we're trying to promote is revisiting these laws to either repeal them or reform them. During that time, it seems necessary from the view of the city council to put a moratorium on those laws, on those tickets. Relief of some kind or another, because we feel the seriousness of this on homeless and poor people. I mean, city council may not agree, but these are things that we feel, since it's a serious.
You want relief for those that get tickets?
Some kind of relief immediately. That's what we're talking about. We'd like to get some refund or restoration for people who have been ticketed. That would be the far end of our request. But if we're getting your attention, we want to at least stop the ticketing right now so that people are not in jeopardy of health and safety. So if we got your attention, that's one of the requests. Particularly, we have disabled persons. I don't care what the situation is, whether they're sleeping in their car or having to camp out or sleep on the street. They should have some special consideration. About the what? Sure, I think that would be a good idea.
We're not asking you, Tony, unless you want to, but we're not asking you to take leadership on this. We're asking you to do a second to another council person's motion that covers this. So we could get the discussion out there.
Do you have leadership on this already?
We're working.
We're working on that. We're just starting to work on that.
And some of the council people have been there longer than you. We have some understanding with them, but still need to partition them, you know.
You want to sit here?
Yes, who are you?
Hi, my name is Philip.
Hi, Philip.
I'm Melissa.
Yeah.
Philip what?
Philip Salcido.
Salcido.
And you're with Brown Berets, right? Also, or you're a friend?
No, Philip. Just an advocate, concern.
Oh, good.
Good.
My name is Francis.
This is what?
Where are you?
Me? Sorry?
Where are you from? What organization or are you?
No, I'm just...
Concerned citizen.
Okay.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
So far we've been questioning and talking with Tony about...
And at this point, and I apologize for the quality of the tape you're listening to, Tony Madrigal and the Human Rights Organization 2 weeks ago at the Sin Fronteras. A couple joins the group, as do I. And they are both Latino, and I believe they're activists who are from Santa Cruz and work also in San Jose. And then you'll hear more discussion. I eventually join the conversation, as do the couple that just came in. Again, sitting at the table is Bernard Klitzner, John Teelking, and Bob Patton of the Human Rights Organization, Tony Madrigal, City Council member, and I believe an individual from the Brown Berets. I don't know if I caught his name. So that's the lineup.
Sleeping ban, camping ban, and the effects it's having on the community, and our desire to have some change made or repeal of the law.
What has been brought up there specifically?
Well, we're about 20 minutes late, so we've got some items here that we brought up.
The 5 point.
I don't have another copy of that. That's the basis thing. Here's another list, a little more specific on just that one there.
Tony, before I forget, I had one question to ask you. On the homeless service garden, or the garden project, I say, has the city council picked a representative to be on their board yet?
That's a good question. Okay.
You don't know. I'll find out.
Okay.
I just wondered if you knew. I don't want to.
Not off the top of my head.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a couple other issues around the poverty issues. And the one would be... Okay, sure.
I'm just going to keep it over myself here.
Cycle. Yeah, we are working, to secure a main motion, but we really would like a second from you.
And there are a couple other issues that we brought up to others and are working with, since we're mentioning other council people. One is the lengthening the amount of time that a visitor can be legally parked in a residential
driveway
as being in their vehicle. Right now it's 3 days, and we were asking other council persons and last year we'd like to see it go to 10 days at least where it's legal, and ideally that would give a person a chance to secure additional housing or space. If they're looking for a job, that gives them a chance to get into the community.
So you'd like to lengthen the amount of time that a visitor can legally be parked in the driveway?
Correct.
And in their vehicle?
In their vehicle.
And be in their vehicle?
And be in and camp in their vehicle.
And again, the softer voice you're hearing is that of Tony Madrigal, the guy who was sitting, and you'd like to know how much time they could park in a driveway in their vehicle. I apologize again for the quality of the tape, but the tape recorder was perhaps not so strategically placed. And also, Tony is taking a lot of his time making notes on a laptop as this goes on and speaking in fairly low tones. So I think the situation does improve, though, so stay with us. I think you'll hear some interesting stuff.
Right now, it's only 3 days at the request. Permission of the owner or renter.
Right now, it's only 3 days?
Yes, and that's according to code. We've asked others in last view, if you hear, if the support's gone to 10 days. One other item that we've asked and working on with other council persons, the reduction in fees for the camping, sleeping, blanket violations at the city level. The rate is figured on a formula and it ends up being about $90 at this time, whereas if the city dropped their basic fee on the violation, then the formula would reflect that reduction and reduce the amount of cost to the individual that's been ticketed. So that's That's the only thing that can really be done with the fee at this point.
Right now it's $90?
Well, I think the city's fee is $20. If I'm wrong or right, somebody...
I think it is $20.
But as the formula goes for both the county and the state, or at least the state, it turns out to be like a $90 ticket, which is quite a burden on a homeless person.
So, say right now it's $20, but if you apply the county state formula, it turns out to be $90?
Yes. And that's what they're ending up with once they get to the court to try to deal with it.
Yeah, so the area is be lowered down to like 10, and it'll go back down to 50.
54. At the time this was revisited back a few years ago when they changed this, it used to be $190, something like that. Now it got down to 54. So the idea is that if the city reduced it to 10, it would bring it back to the state as well.
So let me repeat back to you what I said. Right now, if you apply the county-state formula, after court fees, etc., it'll be about a $90 ticket.
Yeah.
And if you reduce the fee to, what did you say?
To say 10. Say the city's 20, you know, 10. My understanding that it'll
compute out to
about 54 status quo.
Oh, no, exactly. But anything that would help, if we can't get moratorium, at least we're working for a reduction. Anything? Oh, Robert, would you like to make a comment?
When you guys are coming.
What do you mean? You got something you want to say that is a statement, or?
Well, you have an agenda that you're bringing up with Tony, and some concerns, specific concerns.
And that's what this meeting's for.
Right. But it is also about the sleeping ban this meeting. I have a question about that, which I want to ask Tony.
So
when it's appropriate.
Do you want to do that at the end of our...
I could do it now.
Well, if it's about the sleeping ban, I think now would be a good time to vent it.
Tony, when you were running for office, you made some statements publicly about the sleeping ban. And I just wonder, because obviously we're all here because we're interested in the issue of the sleeping ban. What's your position on the sleeping ban now? Because you've said nothing about it for the last 6 months, and I know it's a difficult issue. You mentioned that before in your election activity. But you also gave some of us leave to believe that you were going to be concerned about re-examining a question and dealing with the unfairness of it. Was I wrong in believing him? How should I interpret what you said? What's your position on it?
Well, I'll just tell you that I'll repeat my history personally with homelessness. And it's just like anyone else. You know, I'm human too, and it's... You know, it's kind of an embarrassing, time in my life. You know, I was a typical starving student, and I was homeless.
Forgive me, my question is about the law. I mean, Mike Rotkin was also homeless, and he has a long story about how he slept in his vehicle.
I was homeless.
All right, well, if you don't want to hear it, fine.
Well, no, I'm interested in knowing what your position is on the law. I mean, much as I'm interested in your personal experience, in a more informal setting, we're concerned here about the sleeping ban law. And you made a statement about the sleeping ban law in your election campaign. So what's your position on the law?
What statement did I make?
I'm open to ending the sleeping ban, quote unquote. Open ending the sleeping ban. And that's the way we remember your quote. And our organization did endorse you unanimously, and our supporters, our members and supporters, were pleased with that. And we never told you that, but we wanted to see some change, and we thought we did see some change. So we're not trying to really hold your feet to the fire, but we want to get some clarification on what's going on.
Robert's trying to, I'll tell you that.
Well, we're trying to give you some help. I mean, the Pottinger Guidelines is probably the most reasonable approach to developing a policy for police and in reference to the homeless issues. That's why we presented those to you. I feel you can get some good ideas and direction on that. And the St. Louis decision, too. You got both of those.
Do you think, let me ask you a question a different way, Tony. Is it morally wrong to have a sleeping van, in your opinion?
It's just, I can just speak from my experience. I just know that it was difficult, you know, trying to find a place where I could stay. It was tough.
Do you think most homeless people might have the same experience?
Hard for me to say. I can tell you from my personal experience, it wasn't easy.
Yeah, so you know what we're hearing and seeing, and some of us that have been homeless.
So you know a lot of folks that are going through that, feeling homeless, trying to find a place where they can either park their vehicle or just find a place to stay. I mean, I know what they're going through. I feel the pain.
Now, we feel there's things that could be done to relieve some of that pain, especially around the camping, illegal camping spaces, or for people in their vehicles, a ticket-free zone to be able to park your vehicles. Or at least some little bit more friendliness towards people that are at the lower end of the economic scale here, that are either have found themselves homeless, that are former residents, or are into the community, both either working a minimal job and not being able to afford housing, and having to sleep in their car or go, you know, dash out to hide from the police, get up in the morning, go to work again. And there's a lot of people in that situation right now, including, I'm sorry Tim's not here, but one of the representatives, but there's members of the union that are sleeping in their cars at night and being harassed by police. And that was a lot of Tim's take on it, too. So I don't want to speak for him, but there's homeless at all levels.
Yeah.
A copy of the resolution.
Oh, the platform?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Any one out of Robert?
I haven't heard an answer yet from Kelly about his position on the sleeping van law, because that's what we're looking for, I'm looking for, is to know your position on the sleeping van ordinance. The basic problem with the ordinance is you have space tonight for 40 people. You can confirm that by contacting the homeless service center. Yet you have 1,500 to 2,000 people who are sleeping outside in the city limits, which is a figure kind of agreed to even by Mayor Rotkin. This means 95% of the people face tickets. Now, Rotkin's going to tell you, oh, there are only 30 tickets a month. And that may well be true. But the reality is women can't sleep safely because they can't sleep in groups. They can't sleep in well-lighted areas. They can't use police services if they're worried about getting a ticket. You know, because you've been homeless. And you had to worry about getting ticketed if you slept in the city of Santa Cruz. This is nothing new to you, Tony. You've been around council meetings. You've heard me talk about the issue repeatedly. You know, you've seen me get arrested around the issue, probably.
Okay, so
it's your issue that I'm your take on the issue. I want to know about. Are you? What's your position on the sleeping ban? Do you favor the current law? Do you oppose the current law? Do you favor reforms in the current law? Do you have no opinion at the moment on the current law? What is it? That's what I'm asking.
Look, man,
that's what this meeting is about.
I don't want to get all weepy on you. I'm just thinking back to when I was homeless, and this is a tough issue. You know,
what's tough about it?
It's an emotionally tough issue for me. I hope you can respect that and understand that.
Well, if it's an emotionally tough issue, doesn't that mean you're concerned about the plight of people and you would be concerned about changing the law as soon as possible? Or is that not how it's emotionally tough? What do you mean by emotionally?
It's not easy to talk about. I hope you can appreciate that. I hope you can respect that.
I don't understand why it's hard to talk about the sleeping van as a law.
Have you been homeless yourself?
Yes. I don't find it difficult to talk about.
Well, see, different people cope in different ways.
Okay, I just don't understand quite why you would find it difficult to talk about the law. Not your personal situation, but this law. Why would you find, I mean...
I feel it's connected. I feel it's related. And it's, you know.
Connected to what?
Well, you know, I mean, it's what I went through when I was homeless. Was a large part due to, you know, the law and where, you know, trying to make sure I didn't get caught in my car, you know.
Was that here in Santa Cruz?
Yeah, I was here in Santa Cruz. I was a student of the UCSC. About 8 months, I was homeless.
Was that...
Not like homeless, you know, like homeless couch surfing, you know. I felt lucky I was in my car and other people don't even have cars, you know.
Was the sleeping ban in effect then?
Oh, yeah.
How long has it been in effect?
Since 1978.
1978.
Some say earlier there was some manner of it or another.
I mean, there are plenty of people who find who've been probably experienced more abuse than you have under the sleeping ban. They've been taken to jail. They got their property confiscated. They had their vehicle towed away.
Are you trying to say that?
Well, what I'm saying
because
is
other
those
people have gone through worse stuff than maybe I've gone through.
Well, I'm saying
that I shouldn't have a hard time talking about
it.
I'm entitled to my feelings.
You have a right to have your feelings. What I'm saying
don't
to you
don't
is
don't give me a hard time about it, please.
Well, what I'm saying is
I'm asking you nicely.
I understand, but what I'm saying to you is, can I finish my sentence?
What?
You have to, this is a meeting, you know, you have to want to address a question, I think.
I just feel like you're trying to brush aside my feelings.
No, I'm not trying to brush aside your feelings. I'm telling you, I don't quite understand them. But what I'm saying is that people who have had a harder time than you, and this is true, I think you can understand this, in spite of your feelings, they have an answer to this issue. And their answer is, get rid of this law. Or perhaps they have a different answer. But I'm wondering, are you saying that your feelings do not allow you to take a position on this law or make it difficult for you to take a position on this law?
I'm saying it's not easy for me to talk about this, but that's why I've been trying to be. I'm trying to be attentive, listen, see what y'all got to say. I've written down some of the things that you're asking for, such as a second for me and a.
Okay.
I wrote down that you would like to lengthen the amount of time. Do I need a laundry list the rest of them? Or? I mean, I'm taking notes for myself. Lengthen the amount of time folks can stay parked in the driveway from 3 days to 10 days. You'd like a reduction in the fees from about $20 that it is right now to about 10 or something, so that at the end it can calculate to be something like 54 instead of something like 90 after you apply the county and state formula, you know, after court fees, etc. Anyway, that's
you're missing the main point. Is we're opposed to the sleeping and camping ban, particularly the sleeping aspect of it, because as we look at cities that are compared to us, bigger cities and ones that have a lot of tourists, there's very few percentage of those towns that actually have a sleeping ban. Now they may have something like a camping or a vagrancy thing, but this city is unique in the fact that it tries to regulate the place, time, and manner in which a person can sleep. We're particularly wanting you to take a position on that one or study up on it, because that's the one the lawsuit is particularly focused on. So if we could get someone to bring forward to put on the agenda to revisit or to have a forum or to a subcommittee or something on the camping ban, i.e. particularly the sleeping portion of the camping ban, and if you will second someone that comes forward on that, we would feel really good about this meeting. Now, if we can only get your attention on it so you can study it, then that's where we'll stay. But we were suggesting that we have in the works, in the political works, a possibility to get someone to bring that forward in some manner, where the camping sleeping ban is going to be revisited, put on an agenda, put to a subcommittee, opened up for public testimony, and bring in documentation. So if you missed that part of it, that's really where we're at. And that's why we brought in the pocket guidelines. We figured those are the most basis for making a sound structure. And I'm sorry, I missed your hand up. Could you please go ahead and If he can read.
Regain your thoughts, sorry.
Well, I think it's like Tony here feels like it's like he's being put on the spot or whatever for his personal feelings. I think that to a certain extent we should if his whole affiliation with this would rather be not him being asked to make a decision on it, as in to present his stance, and then that he would rather be an advocate for it, maybe, or just like work. But just like we're doing what he's doing so far, I think that's the point that I was trying to make, right? Doing what he's doing so far and second it or whatever, and not necessarily have to be put on the spot like that as being a representative of it. Is that what you're doing? I'm not sure.
I guess I was basically just asking Robert to, you know, for lack of a better word, to not just try to disregard my feelings by giving me examples of other folks that have gone through a lot tougher stuff than I've gone through, and yet they're able to take a position on it. I mean, hooray for them. I brought more power to them. Good for them.
You're a council member. That's your job.
My job is to have tough feelings?
No, your job is to take a position on these issues and to have some response when that question is raised. You've had 9 months to consider this issue. It's not an unreasonable question, and it doesn't show disrespect to your feelings. It really doesn't.
Well, that's your position.
My concern is the feelings of 1,500 people out there who suffer under the laws that you're taking no action to change. That's my concern.
This is what I mean. It's like
this is the reality, Tony. And that's the fact. What can I say? And I ask you a simple question. You're giving me my feelings prevent me from talking about it? I mean, come on.
See, now you're making fun of my feelings. You're making light of
my
feelings.
I'm making fun of your position, not your feelings.
I think you're being mean, Robert.
Can you give me a coherent position?
Our group wasn't... I'm going to talk for HRO, you know, and set aside just for a second, Robert.
Sure.
We don't expect a decision from you today, but we expect you to at some point, relatively soon, you know, to take a position and respond to our questions today that we have for you. Like, will you take a second, you know, what items, you know, what's your real position on the sleeping game? Things like that. You
know. Honestly, I think this... Any type of initiative for whatever it is will not work if there's this type of nuances in positions or whatever. So when if this is ever going to work, people have to like know what they're dealing with, what they're going to do about it or whatever. Because this, I don't see this working, honestly.
So if
there's some kind of emotional kind of attachment to whatever, maybe it's just not the right type of people.
I can appreciate your honesty because it sounds to me like you're saying you need concrete results. You need things that you can take. You need to be able to count to however many.
I mean, in my experience from working on certain issues, you know, there is an emotional attachment to what you're fighting for because it is, you know. But at the same time, you can't necessarily let that kind of block your whole like perspective on it or whatever. I mean, I'm not saying it's just like whatever, but I think that in any situation, if anything's really going to work, we kind of have to like, you know, be more what's the word I'm looking for? I guess it is a little less like less attached to the emotional part of it and look at it more structured as in what you're going to do, you know.
So now you're...
I don't see this.
Do you agree then with my...
I'm concerned because I understand it's a very emotional thing to have to talk about, but I think as an elected official, you announced all these guidelines that you were going to try to advocate for the people, and that's why I voted for you. And I just feel like very disillusioned that you're not open to... You're be elected as our council member, and we would appreciate it for you to go outside of your emotions and advocate for the people, because obviously there's a concerned amount of people who want to know your stance and like what are you gonna do to help the people who are worried about this issue? Are you gonna just hide behind your emotions, which are very valid? I'm just saying that you need to push those aside in order for you to confront the situation that's at hand. And it's a very important situation because it's obviously affected you, it's affected Robert.
And you're listening to the Human Rights Organization talking with Tony Madrigal, as well as a few other guests. The woman who just spoke is an activist who is a Santa Cruz activist who also works in San Jose, helped form a cop watch, and we're going to hear an interview with her later. Also, you're hearing Tony Madrigal. I'm in the room. There's Bob Patton, Bernard Klitzner, John Teal King, a member of the Brown Berets, are all talking, and I again apologize for the sound quality. I'm going to see if we can turn over the tape here and see if we actually are a little. While I turn over the tape, I'm going to do a little musical break. So stay with us for more Tony Madrigal and the Human Rights Organization and the Sleeping Band. You're listening to Bathrop Spears Broadsides at 101.1 FM, and the call-in number is 427-3772. We should be taking calls fairly soon.
So there's also a flyer was just handed by the infamous Ken Ohm, probably an attempt to encourage arson all over town. It says, old-time American flag burn, free speech, Seabright Beach, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m., Friday, July 1st. And it's about the protests, the desecration amendment that essentially makes it illegal to burn a flag or desecrate the flag. And that has already passed the House of Representatives by a two-thirds majority and is headed for the Senate of the United States. So check it out, folks, if you're interested. It's old-time American flag burn. Keep the raging flames of freedom burning, an orgiastic celebration of free speech. Join us for a sunset burn, ritual, and beach party. Seabright Beach, right side, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m.
And we actually talked about that flag burning on July 1st and played some cuts from it a show or two ago. Here's the continuation of the Human Rights Organization's discussion with Tony Madrigal. There may have been a piece of tape missing. That was the tape I got from the Human Rights Organization, and I know it was very important to Tony that this tape be played in its entirety if it's being played at all. He doesn't want it, and also the entire situation be reviewed, and I appreciate that. And I remind you, Tony has been invited to come into the studio on repeated occasions, has always declined. Or said he's too busy at the moment, and that's the situation. He's also welcome to call in. He may be listening in. Tony, you're welcome to call in, of course, and make any comments you want. Continuing with this tape.
He came here. I feel that from both of your comments. You're eluding some of the questions by using the emotional argument that Robert stimulated. Now, this lady articulated it more like as a third-party person, which I think if you take her input,
I do appreciate what you're saying.
You got to do your job. I do my job. Even if I get on a site and I don't like what it looks like, it's a good thing to do. I have to eat it anyways and do my job.
All right. No, and I appreciate what you're saying, Francis. And I just want you to know I'm trying to do the best I can. I hope you can appreciate that. And regarding your mention of possible adversarial with Robert, Speaking of Robert, I've seen Robert, here and around and everywhere, and I feel comfortable enough, Robert, to just tell you honestly, plain eyes, or hey, you're being mean, or easy there, Robert, or whatever.
You'll tell me your position on the same baggage, you're begging this way now.
And, stuff like that, so. Anyways,
we all feel the same way as him, but I just know how to say it more gently to you.
Well, no, I appreciate your diplomacy, Bernard. Yeah, I do. I heard what you guys are asking, and I'm just not ready to take a position on this right now.
That's
an
answer. That's what we're looking for.
Go ahead, Robert.
I just want to say that, if you come out and say that originally, we'd save a lot of trouble, and I'm glad you said that. You're going to get, obviously it's not satisfactory to a lot of us, but at least there's a straight answer to a straight question.
Mm-hmm.
And you know the feeling, because you were voted down on two votes at City Council Tuesday before last, where you raised union issues on the ATSI, and you raised the union issue on the Wells Fargo Bank.
Oh, yeah.
And you put some hard questions to the city council.
Oh, yeah.
For which I supported you recently in my radio show earlier today.
Yeah, I did that.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Oh.
I thought it was good that you did that. So you understand that when you hear people weaseling around on a question, and frankly, that's what I kind of, however much you feel about it, the question deserves an answer. It really does. That's what we're here to get the answer to. At least that's what I'm here to hear about. They're more patient. They'll give you a couple of weeks to think about it, and then they'll come down on your ass. You know, but the fact of the matter is, they're not coming down your ass because it's personal. You know, I mean, I can't speak for them, but you know the reason has to do with the fact we're advocates for on human rights issues the city council is ignoring and that is hurting people. And you are on that council. And you've had a lot of time to think about this issue. Not just the 9 months in office, but you knew it was an issue before you came into office. So unless you're getting new information here today that you need to assimilate, for you to say you can't take a position on this issue right now makes me wonder. And I ask you this honestly with respect for any feelings you have. Why?
Well,
that's my question.
I can tell you why.
Why don't we let him tell me why? Because I'm the one that, yes, okay. I'm asking him the question.
Well, no, I mean, I'm interested in learning more about, like, the Pottinger case and stuff and, other cases, other cities. I mean, I'm interested in learning more. I definitely can't say no to wanting to learn more about the issue and other examples of other cities. Yeah, this also reminds me of an example that I think Becky Johnson told us once when we ran into each other over at the did we happen to run into each other? Did we have a meeting over at the Saturn? Was it last year before the election?
Yeah, I saw you at Saturn.
Yeah. Do you remember if there was a meeting, Robert, or if we just happened to run into each other?
We were invited to one of the two. You sat down at our table and we talked.
Yeah. And she told me this example of, I want to say, Florida, about some place where they overturned their
system.
That's the same thing.
To give you at least a lot that they're working.
Well, but what she said was that she alluded to, like, Ryan's answer about, the surefire way to dry up support for nonprofits in the community was to overturn something like the sleeping ban, and that people would basically be angry and not contribute. Right. And she said that in some city in Florida, and you're saying it's Pottinger?
Miami.
She is in Miami?
Pottinger's decision
is
in Miami. Yeah.
And she said that it actually turned out to be the opposite, the more folks get more money and whatnot.
Because the homeless became visible and people got embarrassed. So they had to fund services.
In fact, there were several things that came out of it. Police department opened up their locker shower rooms for homeless people to come in and use it, even without an ID. I don't know how long that lasted, but there was a big rush to service the homeless community that was there. Now, where it lays now, I'm not exactly sure. It's been a few years later. But, for a lot of your information, if you want to do some additional research, the Community Action Board's Paul Brendel, he's got just loads and loads of documentaries, loads and loads of stuff. He got both his home
and maybe I can see if I can try to get together with Paul.
Yeah. For documentation information, he has a lot of stuff, especially around the shelter project and the annual reports, things like that that he accommodates. Sources for current information on the homeless count, the amount of shelter available, those kind of things. He has those all. You go to the website and get it. And then one other point, I don't know if it's the last point or not, but they've got a two-pronged approach going here. Even though we've got the lawsuit going, Kate Wells and the other attorneys, to me that's the least direction we want to go. I mean, that's just the attorneys are going to make the money. Nobody's going to feel good about it community-wise, even though we...
And here we have to wait until the tape reverses, and that's going to happen. Hopefully we've got a little more... the final part of this interview or this discussion coming on, and after that we're going to, of course, speak.
I personally, why I'm here to talk to you is this is community. We're doing something together. It's an action that you can really call community, and I think you can win points like that.
Negotiate
the voice of lawsuit. I think it gained your point.
I got to go pretty soon because I have a 2 o'clock
Any last question or comment anybody wants to?
Yeah, I'd like to say, Tony, approximately when can we expect a response from him? I can't answer that right now. It's just, you guys want to
2 weeks, 3 weeks?
I'm curious. When you said you're lining up support?
We want to line up somebody else, but we need a second in place.
Do you have someone else?
We have some. We're working on it. We've been talking to people for years in the city council, so we know how different people lean. And generally, most of the city council people are not going to talk to one or two other persons about suite issues or issues that are of importance or emotional issues. So we try to respect that. This information is not going to go to a whole bunch of other city council people if we have particular agreements with you.
Well, this could be.
And any other comments or questions on your part?
I just want to get, give some timeline here, and, in terms of a response.
I was interested actually in knowing the timeline of when you think you might have that leadership on the council lined up for yourself. What you mentioned.
I can't tell you that.
Still in the works.
But I do know that if we had a second from you, a commitment from some kind of second, that would certainly
And that was the tape. And, of course, the two things the Human Rights Organization were looking for from Councilmember Tony Madrigal in this conversation of a week and a half ago was an agreement to do a second to modifying or repealing the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance, as well as making a public statement opposing the sleeping ban law is what they were looking for. And you heard Tony's response, and if anybody has any thoughts on that issue, you can give a call here to the studio, 427-3772. Phone lines are open. Also, pagesincolor.com is where you can go on the chat room if you want to do it that way. That's a way to get on in case the phone's busy or in case you prefer to use that approach, pagesincolor.com, all one word, all small letters. And again, the phone number is 427-3772. I got some commentary from Becky Johnson, who's been working on this issue for a decade and has written dozens, if not scores, of articles on the sleeping ban and the various peregrinations of different city councils on that issue, as have I might add. And she may be in a little early. She's planning to come in today to noon to discuss another issue, perhaps an issue some listeners are waiting for around the issue of possible a question of membership in the Free Radio Collective, banning, problems with censorship, concerns about confidences. It's kind of hard to put it all into a mouthful. But she's also, for me, and frankly, this is what has been, I think, her strength has been really quite a profound and encyclopedic resource on homeless civil rights issues locally, and continues to be an activist worker who is not afraid to go to jail for her beliefs on these issues, as well as producing this show for a decade, too, helping to get the guests you hear out there into the air. And I say this because it's true. So the issues that maybe she'll speak for herself about the Madrigal issue when she comes in. I mean, she pointed out some facts and that there weren't secrets. Apparently, according to Bernard Klistner, took around 100 people, 100 phone calls to get Tony to agree to talk to the Human Rights Organization at all. That was Bernard's figure. People calling into his number, which, by the way, if you want to get in touch with Tony, it's 420-5028. 420-5028. That will not put you directly in touch with him. That will throw you into his city council voicemail. And I believe I also have his union number as well as his cell phone. But I'm... although Tony doesn't think I'm trying to be respectful of his feelings, I actually am. I think, in a way, I'm much too solicitous of council members' feelings of people in power. I think their actions so profoundly impact, or their inaction so profoundly impacts, not just the feelings, but the life survival situation of hundreds or even thousands of local poor people that, it's really important to not just be candid about issues, but to pressure politicians, frankly, with less mercy than hopefully more effectiveness to change these things, because their action hurts people. And, of course, as you saw, or as you heard, you didn't see it, It, for my money, it was really hard to get a straight answer out of Tony. I mean, even when Bernard, towards the end, asked him, you know, can you tell us in a couple of weeks, he wouldn't commit himself to doing that. I mean, you know, it sounded like squishy soft stuff, campaign promises, vague fluffy talk about the homeless. And, you know, I'm sure he does have his own personal experience that he, you know, feels quite deeply. But the fact that many, many months later it is not yet translated into anything specific and real and concrete, even so far as to say the sleeping ban is morally wrong. You remember Bernard Klitzner asked him that question. And he had no answer. He dodged it, just as he dodged most of the other stuff. And, you know, some of what he's saying is certainly legitimate because, you know, the more information he can assimilate, the better. He was making notes. But the fact of the matter is he also was asked his position to see if he at least held the position that he held in, supposedly held in September and October, or said he held at that time. And he wouldn't repeat it. He simply asked about it. He said, oh, what was my position then, if you may remember. He didn't say, yes, that's still my position. I think we need to examine the sleeping ordinance. He was meeting with constituents who were trying to get him to examine the sleeping ordinance, so maybe you might say that's something. Anyway, subsequent to this, Tony called Bernard and agreed to a meeting with him. And he also called another meeting with him and the Human Rights Organization. He expressed concerns about the issues I raised. He said he was concerned about the homeless. He does want to be a part of the homeless, the solution to the homeless problem or homelessness in Santa Cruz. He didn't mention, I don't know about the sleeping ban. I don't know that that actually reached, those words passed his lips. And again, when he called me, and I have two recorded messages from Tony, which I received in the last week, again, sort of expressing surprise and concern about this interview being aired. He also mentioned his concern with homelessness and his concern that this interview maybe gives a false impression because it doesn't mention the fact that he's willing to continue negotiations with the Human Rights Organization and he wants to see some solutions and so forth. But I'm trying to convey, you know, what I heard from him and what I've heard from the Human Rights Organization, and who knows, maybe he's calling in now. Hi, you're on Free Radio with me.
Hi, Robert. This is Paul calling.
Hey, Paul, Marcel, and Samson, the terror of Mike Rotkin.
I was listening to this tape involving Tony Madrigal and the Human Rights Commission, and I found it very, very frustrating. I couldn't make out all of the details, but I got the gist of it, and I have an observation to offer.
Please.
Can I go ahead with that?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. The observation is that people really change as they move up in the power structure. It's really frustrating for me because Tony was, and really was, this sort of grassroots candidate, a regular guy, a renter, you know, friend of the common man, you know, the ordinary people. And two things seem to be changing here. First of all, you've already mentioned that his position on the sleeping ban is wavering, and that he won't make a comment one way or the other about it now. That's what we heard in that on that tape. And the other thing is that he's starting to play some of the same games that the established city councilors play with you, questioning your tactics and your presentation, attacking the person instead of the message, and instead of dealing with the message. And I picked up on that sort of, it almost sounded like sniping. There was one exchange in there that was really hostile to you. Things that Tony said that were hostile to you, and I'm really surprised, frankly. It's very disappointing. Someone I supported, and I really would have trouble supporting him again.
Yeah, well, you know, the situation is also, I didn't mention this, and I haven't mentioned it to Tony. I've called him back twice. I spoke with his machine twice, and I spoke with him personally once. And, you know, I like Tony as a person. He's a nice guy.
Yeah,
you know,
the same way.
He's a very amiable guy. You know, he's very friendly, kind of, you know, nice guy to chat with. And it is a but. He's a council member, too. And that, of course, therein lies the rub. I apologize, by the way, for the tape quality. Again, it was, you know, the issues that the Human Rights Organization tried to bring up were, you know, they want him to second a sleeping ban resolution, not be the person who introduces it. They're trying to be, you know, more gentle about it. Let him just second it and then look for their presenter of a resolution at the city council that will ask for changing the sleeping ban. And they also want him to make it so that the 3 days in a driveway and get out of town law that Fitzmaurice put into place gets expanded so you can stay for 10 days in a driveway with the permission of the owner and get out of town. And they also wanted them to, they wanted Tony to drop the sleeping ban fine back to its 1999 level of essentially $54, or if you will, at the city level, it's $20, but because of all the fines, it has to go up and so forth. So they have to reduce it.
Oh, I should get off the phone so other people can call in. I'll continue listening.
Sure, let's do that.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Paul, for reminding me of that. I tend to blather on with other people on the line. The other thing is that Tony, I don't know about his changing in office, frankly. You know, while I have seen Tony lead some rent control demonstrations around a particular favored group of tenants and a particularly egregious landlord, for which I commended him and which I supported him, I have also seen no action on his part to support rent control publicly for, maybe he can correct me on this, for the De Anza people, for the Clearview Court people, or for people who are renters generally in Santa Cruz, you know, which I think is pretty basic elementary stuff. You know, you want to stop this incredible profiteering. I don't see a call for a profiteering speculation tax, which I think would be nice. Some kind of tax that deals with, you know, vacant property or property transfer turnovers. I mean, again, I'm not a tax expert. You know, maybe Mike Rodkin would tell me such taxes are all illegal. We can't do any of that stuff. Instead, we have to give away the boardwalk to the Seaside Company or whatever, you know, or give away the tide lands there and do this and that. But, you know, frankly, there are other options, and I want to see council members on the left pressing on those issues, advocating for those issues. And Tony, as I credited him at this meeting, did do a couple of he has stood up for IATSE, the union at the trying to support, you know, Work Specific Auditorium, and had their contract essentially terminated, although I guess it was put in different language, and he brought that issue up. That was the issue I tried to speak on when I was arrested at City Council on June 14th. Tony didn't object to my being arrested, has never suggested that there's any problem with that, never apologized for it, never expressed any concern about my being brutalized by the police in that situation. You know, this is, you know, fine. I mean, he's maybe he doesn't feel it. He feels it's completely appropriate. But, you know, his position on public issues around the sleeping ban, of course, that was the issue in question. And he also, as Paul Marcelin Sampson said, part of his conversation with Bernard afterward that he wanted me to refer to so that I could, the audience could be informed, he still was concerned about homeless issues and he really cares about the homeless. And he has been himself homeless. These are statements he's made. And he wants to meet again with the Human Rights Organization, and he's willing to do that, although I think the Human Rights Organization would like some public statements from him prior to that meeting, if I understand it correctly. They haven't made some ironclad rule, but they're strongly encouraging him to make a public statement before the next meeting. I don't know if they've decided if they're even going to meet with him again yet. But he also said in his conversation with Bernard Klitzner that he wanted me excluded from these meetings because he felt I was... he couldn't work with me, or I was disruptive, or whatever. Now, you heard my interjections in the my part of the dialogue. And frankly, I thought I was within reasonable bounds. I mean, I made some points that made him uncomfortable, and I followed up on questions. But I was really trying to some extent, give him the benefit of the doubt, but not let him run away with what sounded to me to be generously stuff I didn't understand. My feelings do not allow me to discuss this. It's really hard for me to talk about it. I suppose, you know, sure. I mean, it could be some trauma that happened. He could have been beaten by a police officer. You know, that has yet been undescribed. You know, that's possible. He hasn't come out with that yet. But, you know, I think that it's not, unless it's some sudden emotional epiphany or revelation that we didn't know about before, frankly, it sounds like the same old cover-up stuff, really. And I don't mean, you know, to be mean to Tony, as he puts it. I mean to be honest and characterize what's really going on. And I know members of the Human Rights Organization are hopeful of getting Tony to do something. I am not. I don't think he's likely to. But, you know, hey, you know, if I'd love to be proven wrong and disappointed and shown to be too pessimistic. But I think it's important that the community see where people are standing on these issues. And one, as I said, one of the things that Tony wanted to make clear, and actually one Human Rights Organization member brought out, was a request that I not be a part of any future such discussions because it upset Tony. He also wanted to choose the union representative, probably because he doesn't like Tim Ahern. You know, I mean, this is, I guess, is something politicians do. But in my world, you know, it's not something you want to, and we don't, succumb to it. And we have to, in essence, reveal it and talk about it and say, what's our next step? And that really is the issue for the Human Rights Organization. And, of course, Tony will be at the, I imagine, at the Wednesday meeting, not Thursday, as I've said before, but Wednesday meeting of SEIU, the union that's meeting on Wednesday night, three, four days from now, at their hall at Locust and Mission at 6:45, 7 o'clock, to debate the sleeping ban, to have a forum on it, because I think Tim Ahern and other union activists want the SEIU to take a strong position against the sleeping ban, to change the sleeping ban. It has to be legal for people who are poor in Santa Cruz, who have no place to go, to be able to sleep somewhere without the threat of arrest. It's simply, and most basically, a human rights violation. So, that is what's cooking with that. Now I'm going to play a little bit of the discussion that ensued afterward by some of the folks. And I think this is, frankly and hopefully, a little more audible, though it was recorded at a slow speed. Always a risk. Let's see how we do with this.
Well, it's about 3:45 on June 26th, Sunday afternoon, in Sin Fronteras Cafe, talking with
Philip
and
Francis.
The two of you are playing this game of marbles, and it's called Mancala. But that's not relevant to the question at hand, because after having 15 minutes doing a long interview with you and that not getting on tape, we're now going to try a 5-minute interview, and which I'm good standing. In which you talk about, you came to a human rights organization interview or discussion with Tony Madrigal, council member for the Santa Cruz City Council, on the issue of the sleeping ban. And what did you think of that situation? You had some reactions to that, Francis?
Well, first of all, I think that Tony Madrigal is not all he says he is. I came to this meeting just as a concerned citizen, just to find out what Tony Madrigal is really doing after I had voted for him. I didn't want to just be an outside observer and letting the city council do whatever they wanted. I wanted to be active and be part of this community. So I came down and I was really, really, really shocked, is an understatement, to see how Mr. Madrigal was dancing around the issue. He was not confronting the issue at hand about the sleeping ban. And when confronted with questions regarding his position on the sleeping ban, he was very unwilling to take a stance. He felt very threatened. He said that he was being pressured, and he was almost teary-eyed because it's an issue close to home, because he was homeless, and he got really emotional about it, and he said, I don't want to talk about it. And when I asked him a question, I was like, well, I elected you as my politician. You need to, when you first started to be elected for your position, you stated that you were against the sleeping ban and that you would take part in actually eliminating it. So I was very concerned about his not being able to stand up for his position. And so I said, well, if that's the case, then I've discredited it. I believe that you have no more credit with me. And I felt that he was just not being very truthful.
What was Tony's reaction? Did you, I think you made a statement during the meeting to this effect, right?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
What was his response?
Oh, well, I asked him, since you're a member of the city council, it is your job to take a position and to clarify to the people who elected you in the first place to stand up against this, to say something. Not, you don't have to be advocating for, you know, total anarchy or anything. I'm just asking you to take a position. And not cower behind your feelings. Exactly. Thank you, Phil. And, yeah, I mean, if you're a politician, you paid the price to be a politician. You have to take it how it is. Or else get into another field. This is not your job. You know, this is not where you should be if you can't just simply state where you're coming from.
What did he say?
He said that he, you know, it's really difficult for him to say something about this right now because it's very sensitive to him, that he can't talk about it right now, that he, you know, he's very emotional about it, that it's going to take him some time to think about it and, you know, to get away from his emotional, like, instability. That's basically what he said.
Did you recommend a good therapist?
No, I should have, though. He seemed really distraught.
And Philip, did you give Tony a hug on this issue?
Oh, God. Yeah, he was... We were pushing the boundaries, you know, of his emotional comfort there with the homeless sleeping ban, with the sleeping ban issue. I saw firsthand how, when asked by Robert Norris, you know, what's just a blunt, plain question, what is your opinion on the sleeping ban? He's like, you know, I can't handle this. I don't want to talk about it. It's too close to home. It's a difficult topic to talk about. And just jumping all over the place, going under the table, just, I mean, not physically, but with words. And it seemed like he was very surprised by Francis's statement, clearly backing up Robert and in the same vein as Robert's, you know, attacks and questioning. And he was made uncomfortable by someone backing up Robert with the same opinion as him.
Aren't you ashamed of having made Tony feel uncomfortable?
Oh, no, of course not. I feel that it's everybody's duty to make these city council people feel uncomfortable. They've been made to feel too comfortable for too long. I feel that if you voted for Madrigal, I say I am just, I came here with no prejudice against the man. I had no idea what his true politics were in this regard. And he completely like took me off hand. I thought he was going to be totally different, much more open and willing to talk about it, and he wasn't. And I feel that if you voted for Tony Madrigal, Tony Phony, then you need to call him up. His number is 831-420-5020. Fax him if you like, 831-420-5011, and let him know what's your stance on this issue. You know, I voted for you. Come on now, like, let's have a backbone.
Yeah. There were a lot there.
Just actually, the numbers she gave are numbers from, I guess, one of Tony's pieces of his own literature. But Tony's actual city council number, for those who do want to ask him about his thoughts on this issue. And apparently phone calls have an impact, because the reason he attended this Human Rights Organization meeting, according to the leaders of that organization, is because they got more than 100 phone call people to call Tony and say, please meet with this group. And he did. 420-5028. 420-5028 is Tony's number. And Tony, if you're out there, you know, call in. Phone line's open. 427-3772.
I feel that when Tony was running for election, you know, he reached out to the idealistic, positive thinking youth in the community that want change and that, you know, work for it themselves and saw hope in Tony. And I know I did, I know Francis did, and I know a lot of others who you know, saw in him some type of hope for resistance and change and agitation in the city council, because from what I saw with Mike, from what I've seen with Mr. Mike Rodkin, he's a big two-face. He came to a class of mine up at the UC and talked for an hour.
Tony Madrigal or Mike Rodkin?
Mike Rodkin. Can I talk about Mike Rodkin?
Sure.
My opinion. Oh yeah. Well. Mayor of Santa Cruz, he came up super cool on his motorcycle to our class. And he talked for an hour on socialism and the benefits and the history and how good it was, and just came across as a proponent of a socialist minded government. And what we know now, that's also a phony. Mike phony.
How is Mike phony on this issue?
He's for the ban, and he's for anything that would help people, impoverished people and people of color, better themselves. And I've actually gone to one of the city council meetings where Robert went up to the platform and was speaking his mind. He was not being intimidating. He was not being rude. And they were laughing at him. This was when it was the sitting duck period before Rodkin became mayor.
Lame duck.
And so they were all being very rude to him and laughing and smirking. And they weren't even open-minded to what he was saying. And then a homeless man came up and he wanted to speak his mind. And they were being very rude to him as well. And I feel like that there's no democracy in Santa Cruz whatsoever, and if these city council people are going to be acting like that, then people need to step up to the plate and start, actually asking them the questions that Robert asks them, putting them, making them feel nervous, making them actually say the things that, they're too scared to say, like Tony Madrigal right now. It just proved it to me, and it's really horrific. And it's another thing, if you're going to vote for somebody because you feel that their ideals are in the right place, that's fine, but then you also need to take that step further and actually investigate what they're doing, actually talk to them, take part in a true democracy, and don't just sit back and let fascism take hold.
Now, you've been working, the two of you, on a number of issues in San Jose. I think you're planning to move to San Jose, a free radio station, a community center, a cop watch. Philip, any comments on that?
Yeah, there's a little hard-working community center in downtown San Jose, the Centro Atlan Chicamocstoc, located at 520 South 2nd Street. It's been in existence for about 5 years, and we offer English classes in just support for the large minority population in downtown San Jose. If folks have trouble with the police or their landlords or their whatever, they can come to us, and we can do whatever we can in offering them help with their situation. Martin Rodriguez of San Jose came to us after he was arrested and beat by the police and charged with giving his son drugs and being drunk in public. He still is suffering from the torturous beating that he was given, and there is proceedings in the San Jose courts. I think his trial starts on July 18th, and the city keeps changing the DAs the public defender on him. There was one defender, Miss Callahan, who was working with him for a number of months and was starting to do some investigations before her supervisor transferred her. So there goes the hope for him. Not to say that all hope is lost, but the city is very slick in whitewashing any kind of investigation into the police brutality that goes on daily over there.
Now, there's a story in the Metro, not the Metro Santa Cruz, but the Metro over in San Jose on this subject.
Yeah, it's a very extensive article on Martin's case, and I think it's doing a good job of letting people aware of what's happening. There's a very sympathetic journalist over there. Her first name is Brinda, and she's covered us when we've gone out to do Cop Watch, and she's also doing work with Martin. And I'm surprised that the Metro is allowing these articles to be published, and I hope that there's a lot more to come.
Wouldn't it be nice if Santa Cruz had something similar? Francis, you involved with Cop Watch at all?
Yes, so I've gone a few times to overlook to see if the cops doing their duty and actually not harassing people and making them out to be crazy, psycho rebels, gangsters. So yeah, I've gone out and observed the cops a few times. You know, they're open to like people coming and looking at them. Oh, you're gonna come watch us? Ha ha ha! Ooh yeah! Ooh. Better watch myself! Ha ha ha! You know those little cracks they make and stuff. You know, but overall, I think it's been positive that we've been there and actually just made sure that they didn't overstep themselves and overstep their power and because it is very, very, very probable that if we hadn't been there for a lot of the time, they would have, abused their power.
How can one get involved in San Jose Cop Watch?
They can come down to the center, 520 South 2nd Street in San Jose, really close to downtown.
Friday nights,
after 9 or so, they could come down. We usually get going like at 9:30, 9:45. So yes, they wanted to participate, and we're open to anybody coming down and just saying, I want to participate, and coming down.
Tom Belote, who's helped set up a cop watch in Watsonville and I guess in San Jose as well as Santa Cruz, though they kind of tend to shrivel on the vine after he leaves because I guess it requires a lot of energy to keep it going, has also been helpful in helping you guys with a free radio station.
Yeah, he's helped us acquire the equipment and put it together, and we've done one broadcast of a David Rovick concert that was held at the center, and at the moment we are hoping to get it set up again and organize people to come get and do shows and whatnot. We have a really small base over at the center, so any work takes a lot of part on a lot of work on the part of a very small amount of people. But it's there, it's set up, and we just have to go into the second stage of it.
How are the homeless being treated in St. James Park and Cesar Chavez Park? We heard here over here some pretty serious harassment in the last year or two.
Anywhere about the homeless?
Of course, as in anywhere, they harass them. I'm not aware of a sleeping man there. I'm curious to find that out. But as everywhere, I always see cops harassing the homeless folk to not sleep in the park and stuff. But I think for the most part, since there's more of them in San Jose, I think it's more not as pushed, perhaps. But I'm not as well educated on that subject in San Jose. So I'd like to find out more about that.
We'll expect a report in the near future. How about Food Not Bombs? How's it doing over there?
Food Not Bombs isn't good, from a word we heard just the other day. It seems as though they're not very organized right now, and people have been leaving from school and such stuff, going back home, so it's not very strong at the moment. But we're hoping to move this to San Jose soon, begin a co-op there, maybe move the center down to the co-op, have it more organized, bring more youth involved, because right now it's just Philip, me, this older activist woman named Ketsa, and Tom, who used to come, but now he doesn't come as often because I guess he's really busy. So we're really, 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 really stressed for help. And like, if anybody wants to, if they live in San Jose or if they have friends in San Jose, get involved, do whatever. Like, we have just a need for everything, like help to write grants or just to organize meetings or to help organize the shows.
Number to call is?
What's the number of the center? But we have a website, and it's BarrioDefenseCommittee.org. So if you want to go to that website, you can find out all the information on there.
BarrioDefenseCommittee.org. How about the anti-war movement? Any progress there?
Well, there are a number of activists in San Jose that work alongside with the center, and so the community center is always involved with any anti-war march or things like that. Also, we have a lot of punk rock shows to raise funds. I bring a lot of the hardcore punk bands from Santa Cruz and from San Jose and from the Bay Area down to San Jose, and the shows are held at Makla. It's an art space also around the corner from us. And
where is that?
It's on 510 South 1st Street. And so it's also a good space because there aren't any punk rock venues. There aren't any all-ages venues where teenagers or people that don't want to drink can go and just listen to music. It's much like here in Santa Cruz where you have to have a permit to have a concert. It's very hard to do any kind of show just to have fun.
We have been talking with
Francis
and
Felipe.
Gracias. A las dos.
And you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org. That conversation happened about 10 days ago. Let's hear a little more from the streets, and then hopefully we're going to get the call-in from Pebbles up north and the update on the medical marijuana and the crackdown going on in Mendocino County.
July 1st.
Thank you, Ken, for lending me that flyer.
Yeah.
Any comments on this proposed flag roast?
Well, just that we should bring all the flags that look like American flags that aren't actually American flags, like admiralty flags. That even if they pass the flag bank burning amendment. Would that apply to flags that look like American flags that actually aren't, like the flag of the Admiralty and other such flags?
They're singing downtown. Excuse me. I have to hustle away.
The clouds are much brighter there.
It's the downtown safe singers doing their thing. But on the line with me now, calling in faithfully from up north, is Pebbles. Hey, Pebbles.
Hi, Robert.
Can you hear me? You can?
Pardon me?
I can hear you, too. I'm having a little trouble hearing here. All right, let's see. Okay, how you been?
Oh, better and better in many ways.
Better and better. Excellent.
I'm still a pariah in Ukiah, of course.
You're a pariah in Ukiah?
Yeah.
Hey, that's
my type. You know, the backyard bandwidth extended, but life isn't static. And so the situation took a drastic turn for the better last week. You know, we, the activists, came into last week's Ukiah City Council meeting with a brand new June 23rd opinion from Attorney General Bill Lockyer about what cities can and can't do under the authority of Prop 215.
Uh-huh.
A city can't add anything inconsistent with state law, and a city can't create penalties that are not in state law, as in the case of property owners getting fined something like $2,500 if they knowingly allow patients to break federal law by growing on their property. A city can't produce an ordinance that is duplicative of state law. For instance, caregivers shouldn't have to go through the application process twice, first in the state where the application respects privacy, your name is not even on the patient card, and then you go through it again in the city where the law is intrusive, requiring criminal background checks to get a use permit to cultivate in commercial zones, which state law doesn't require. And so the sense of the Attorney General's opinion goes against the legality of use permits not required by Prop 215. And you know, it brings up the question of city law violating a patient's privacy rights by requiring that a person have to apply at a public hearing to grow marijuana in their backyard or in their home. This is obviously not required by state law. So we made some progress, but thanks to Christine Kehoe, a California senator. I don't know her or where she's from, but she wrote in and asked Attorney General Lockyer three questions, which he then, you know, elaborated on in his opinion. It was the questions were, I can just read them real quickly. Does the statewide registry and identification card program preempt the operation of a city's own registry and ID card program? 2, may a city continue to operate its own registry and ID card program until the statewide registry is implemented in the county in which the city is located? And then 3, may a county designate a city to perform the functions of the county health department under the statewide registry and ID card program? So yeah. As a result, we just threw this monkey wrench into the process. They'd not seen it, and the city council members didn't care anything about seeing it.
Now,
you would think they would jump up and say, "Oh my gosh, we're so curious. Is there if there's any problem with our law, we'd like to know. We need to know ahead of time."
Pebbles, can you hear me?
Mm-hmm, yes.
Give me the remind the listeners about the law you're facing up in, it's Ukiah, right?
Yes, in anyone within city limits who lives within city limits has to get has a number of restrictions on them that are not in the law itself and that are inconsistent with the law. You cannot grow outdoors at this point. There's a ban on outdoor cultivation because of the, quote, smell and the threat of robberies. And the Planning Commission is recommending that the law be more flexible and change to 2 outdoor plants and 4 indoor plants per person. So if 2 patients are living together, it would be a 4 plant maximum outdoors. And then that would make it, what, 8 plants indoors. So that, people really are not in a position to live there. And plus, a new recommended part of the law would be that anything within 300 feet of a school, a church, park, or old folks' home would be off limits, even indoors. So that would be, according to one of the commissioners, 80% of the city would be off limits to us.
Now,
and I think that qualifies as being a pariah in Ukiah.
Now, Pebbles, how many plants would you say is a reasonable limit, if there is such a thing? How many? Because you have a sense of that. You're with the Medical Marijuana Patients Union. In fact, I imagine you helped form it.
Yes.
People, your average person, you know, I guess it obviously varies from condition to condition, but give us some sense of how much marijuana usually is required for a person who has a medical need for marijuana, or what the range is.
Uh-huh. Well, I could say between 6 plants and 20 plants within a 100 square foot plant canopy per patient would be, I mean, at least that's what is allowed. And as for what people might need, it would probably be double that. However, many people can live within that. It just depends on a person's situation. Many people who have extreme chronic pain, certainly would require 2 or 3 times more than that for a year.
So the city was preparing to proceed to violate, or actually to kind of ignore the more liberal county situation, which is tending toward medicalization of this whole problem, and you've elected a liberal DA and so forth. But the city of Ukiah, perhaps like certain other cities, wanted to rule out 80% of the city for both indoors and outdoors growing, limit severely the number of plants outdoors, and also limit the plants indoors. What was the additional requirement that they had?
This is the recommendation. Right now there's a ban outdoors. But the recommendation from the Planning Commission that they hope the City Council will adopt, because they know the ban is illegal, is 2 outdoors and 4 indoors for the 6 plant minimum allowed under state law. They would be adopting state law. They don't like county law. It's way too flexible.
Huh.
And they also don't appreciate Sheriff Craver or DA Norm Vroman because they respect patients' rights.
Well, what about the... Have any arrests been made or plants been confiscated under this emergency ordinance, which is what...
We know of.
Uh-huh.
And we don't know if people are going ahead to grow. I mean, some people are. We know some people are. What we don't know is whether or not people are taking this seriously. Because it's in the early stages. They would be small plants. If they're behind a fence, nobody would particularly see them. So we're not privy to this. We do have one person... a veteran who says that he would be willing to be a co-plaintiff in an injunction, which we plan for the near future. After we meet again, in 2 weeks from now to see if the City Council agrees with our analysis that there's too much in this law to pass it.
So... have you talked to any of the City Council members? Is there a turnaround? Are the newspapers bemoaning the new Attorney General's opinion?
No. The newspapers, the main one, Ukiah Daily Journal, would be very interested in anything that would be favorable. The editor is extremely supportive. She supported the idea of a community garden. And there aren't any really other newspapers, other than the Press Democrat, that follow it, and they would just say, monkey wrench is thrown into the process. They wouldn't be against it as such. It's only the cities that are small, where everybody is on top of each other, very much like Chinatown, mm-hmm. where there is protest of, this kind of blank check they think patients and caregivers are getting from the county, which isn't true, but it's the perception. And so they're the ones, along with the federal government, who are virtually joining hands in this battle to roll it back, at least to more controllable limits.
Now, the last time we spoke, we're talking with Pebbles Trippett of the Medical Marijuana Patients Union way up in Mendocino County. You told us that you had tracked down an injunction prospect, the idea of maybe trying to sue the city to civilly stop this law from going into effect?
Yes, we can tie this up in court for a long period of time, we think, at this point. Even before we got the Attorney General's opinion, which is so close to ours, we felt we could tie it up because we knew ourselves a ban is just not going to work.
Is it on hold now, or are you still waiting and thinking about going into court?
Oh, it's on hold only because of this new situation, which could turn our direction. We don't want to prevent it, the process from going our direction. And life is so dynamic on this issue that anything could happen. In fact, as a result of this opinion, the Attorney General has been asked to give another opinion now about this new state ID card suspension.
Talk a little bit about that, because I know that there was quite an extensive story about the, the state closing down its new ID cards for medical marijuana patients. And I've been looking, strangely enough, the Sentinel, our local paper, which I call the Urinal, has had a very long story on it, but I assumed since it was an AP story, it would be available online. Apparently it's not. I've been looking for it. I'm going to have to go scrounge up an old copy of the Sentinel. But you, I imagine, have sort of looked into that story somewhat.
Somewhat, and yes.
Tell us about this. The state has an ID program for getting you a card, so that you really shouldn't have to get involved with that anyway, because
and you don't have to. It's
right.
Voluntary.
This Proposition 215 says you just need, as essentially, a doctor's recommendation, either verbal or written, right?
Yes, that's all that's required. And
right.
People who want an extra layer of protection, if that's what it provides. Would go to their local county and to get a card which would put them on record with the knowledge of the sheriff and the DA that if they chose to know about it. Although they don't necessarily know about it because it goes through the health department and then the records are shredded there, at least in Mendocino County. After they verify the doctor, they don't need the information any longer. In fact, it could be very cumbersome to have those records, because the fear is that the federal government will subpoena them and use them against patients who they're trying to protect, who the state and the county are trying to protect. So that's why they claim they've suspended the process. They don't want the federal government, who they know is on a rampage, to have access to these
records. Do you have any updates on attacks on medical marijuana clubs subsequent to Raich versus Ashcroft? You want to give us the update on that? The Supreme Court.
Aside from the.
Before you do, let me just say that Raich versus Ashcroft was a decision handed down by the Supreme Court that essentially said, we don't care what the states allow, no medical marijuana, we're going to arrest you for even private use of medical marijuana under a doctor's care in your own home. Correct?
Yes, but as long at this point,
I mean, it's just a threat, but it in essence says we think we preempt everything.
That's right.
The feds think they can just, you know, they can do what they want.
And that's right.
Has this resulted in any clubs or distribution centers being shut down? If so, where? As far as you
know, the wave of cannabis dispensaries that were shut down, the Asian Three, probably a racist thing, in San Francisco. Are the same as what everyone knows about. I don't have any new information on that. I know that up here and around the state, several dispensaries have closed themselves down, which may be a wise move until we figure out what's happening.
How many
do you in Ukiah, and there are none now.
How many are there in Mendocino County?
There's only one other on the coast in the entire county that I know of.
And have you talked to them? Are they planning to stay open? Or are they planning to shut
down?
They're
planning to stay open because the coast has a different flavor, and that's under Sheriff Craver if it's out of the cities, and that one is in the county territory.
So they're not afraid of a federal raid?
No, it's just kind of stuck off by itself, and it's a little thing, and everyone is a bit afraid. I shouldn't say they're not afraid. Everyone is in a state of panic. Quiet panic about all this.
Well, the main concern, though, as I understand it, and I share this kind of view down here, is not with the feds or even with the state authorities, though it's sort of too bad they've stopped their marijuana card program, but it's with local authorities acting repressively or hypocritical so-called liberals maintaining a situation where, as for example in Santa Cruz, you can't even get a club open here. We had a number of people on the air about a week and a half ago I think it was either last Sunday or the Sunday before. A woman here is trying to open a distribution center, a cannabis distribution center, medical marijuana club. And Santa Cruz has had no clubs open for 5 years. We have WAM, but WAM isn't a club. It's a cooperative,
yep,
which has a favored position, but a very limited number of people can use it.
Yep.
And, you know, it's a situation where the local authorities are doing the repression. And I want to say and remind people that there is a march, a medical marijuana march here in Santa Cruz, starting at noon on Saturday. And I guess that would be, today's the 10th, it would be the 16th. I'm not mistaken. That's next 16th, next Saturday, July 16th, beginning. I think it's at Cathcart and Pacific. But to be sure, you should go to my old favorite news source, indiemedia.org, which I like in spite of their banning of my producer Becky Johnson, because I think they do good work, as she does. And check out when that march is happening. And that march is going to start at noon and go to where it's happening, I should say, and then go to City Hall. And some of the activists on the show that we had here, including Andrea Tischler of the Compassion Flower Inn and Peter Koch of the now defunct Pacific Coast Cooperative, the only club that tried to open in the last 5 years and was promptly essentially shut down by the planning department using the special use permit crap.
Mm-hmm.
And also the zoning, that they claim that there is a law in force which prohibits clubs in the downtown area. It effectively prohibits clubs all up and down the business district and allows them only in isolated industrial areas where landlords don't want to rent to people anyway, or there are other problems that have resulted in no clubs. So it's a problem with the locality, the local scene, not just the state and the feds. Obviously, that mm-hmm. contributes to it. Our city attorney, John Barisoni, apparently, according to Lisa Molyneux, the woman who wants to open the Greenways Club here, has been working on it for a year without success, trying to get it through the planning department. There, she's now being told that Barisoni, the city attorney, is blocking it because of his concern that the city will be liable under Raich versus Ashcroft, the Supreme Court decision that says, come in and arrest him if they smoke a joint medically or inhale through a vaporizer.
I'm sure that the counties are concerned about suits and also,
the county
other liability by the feds.
The city, yeah. I mean, well, no doubt. But tell us some more about what's, continue with your report. I think you've got some good updates, and I, you don't need much prompting.
Well, the connection with what you're saying, that is that the locals are getting more repressive as well, is because the federal government is giving them the green light, and the people who've been in the corners, in the shadows up until now, are able to come out and perform in going after people. There are several marijuana busts of local patients, and some of them are also caregivers here. So that tells me that it's more than likely happening everywhere if it's happening here. So they're testing the limits of state law. They Norm Vroman, when I called him the other day, the DA here, who's reasonable, said, well, of course, Pebbles, if somebody sends their recommendations in to me and I look at them and they are bona fide, there will be no charges. So do you understand? That's important to know, that if a patient or patient/caregiver is busted, the best thing they could possibly do is to give the information to the prosecutor, whom they usually consider the enemy. And if you have a lawyer, the lawyer is going to tell you, don't you dare do that. You never talk to the other side. However, it's not true necessarily. Your best bet might be to talk to the, quote, other side. And Roman told me himself, because I've been urging people to do this, and I wanted it confirmed if it was a good guess. And he said, yes, of course, were they to send those to me and I were to check them out and they were all right, I would not go through with the prosecution. I had asked him, why do you make people go through the Mauer motion, which is sometimes months or years? It could take a long time to get through that process if people want to stretch it out. Why do you make them go through that? We have two Mauer motions right now in court, both of which, I believe, will be dismissed at the next court hearing.
Now, Pebbles, tell me what a Maurer motion is again.
That's the motion given to us by the California Supreme Court in People v. Maurer that says that if you are a medical marijuana user, you are no more criminal than a prescription drug user. Therefore, you should not be prosecuted. And if you raise your doctor's note, that's the reasonable doubt, then the court should dismiss it. And so many people are coming forward with their, the patient themselves is coming forward, or their patient and their caregivers. Usually it's a few more that get you busted. And the court is seeing, well, these are legitimate patients. They see the records, they hear the testimony, and they know it's not going to get past a jury because they're innocent. And so they're dismissing the entire case. And we need a record of everything that is dismissed under Maurer as opposed to a technicality, like evidence suppression, you know, didn't give them their Miranda rights, didn't read them their Miranda rights, or these various other things which work in a defendant's favor occasionally, but not usually. And therefore, go for the merits. Just raise the Maurer motion. Skip the other, you know, get out of it some other way motions. And you use the best we've got, a unanimous decision by the California Supreme Court that says we are equal to prescription drug users.
We're talking with Pebbles Trippett. Pebbles, I'm really eager at some point, I say this every time we talk, and I'm going to say it again, to, you know, get your... some of your experience on how to deal with lawyers. We've heard of client management and client control. Of course, the real problem is attorney management and attorney control.
Yes.
Because you've got attorneys who don't want to press political issues, who have their own, you know, private connections with judges and police, have their own very crusty, often arrogant way of doing things, which they're kind of impervious to the defense, to the defendant's interest. They think they know better, and in many cases they do know the law, but in some cases, I'm sure yours, for instance, they don't.
They didn't in my case.
No. I mean,
they didn't know as well as I did because they didn't care.
You've had all that time as a jailbird, how many years behind in jail to actually study the law?
Right? Yeah. Well, it was probably a couple of years total from, you know, in several months in different counties. And in between, which is the hard part. It's not the jail that's so hard. It's all the in-between where you're under prosecution. And they can rearrest you from on different grounds. And it's where you get to study what it is you're facing, and you find out things that the lawyers didn't learn in law school. Therefore, they don't know about them.
And apparently don't bother to learn from all the cases they see in court either.
Well for instance... I was able to get an amicus brief into the U.S. Supreme Court in the Oakland Cannabis Buyers Club case. And I did find a lawyer who was willing to put that in for me, otherwise it wouldn't have gone. And he said, well, your Roe versus Wade precedent, you know, I never learned that it's a patient's rights case in law school. I learned that it was a reproductive rights case. And talk about having hard to unlearn something. I said, but if it wasn't a patient with a doctor, you know, then it would never have gone through. Yes, you're right. It is. In that sense, yes, it is. It's just a very, they lose often, and I know this from having lost so often myself, that they go get a little foot in the door and you're better off approach.
Well, I'm running out of time, but I want to encourage you to continue this new tradition of calling in. I hope it's a new tradition. And giving not just an update on what's been happening up there, and it sounds like a lot has been happening, and you briefed us, even though it may seem a little arcane to folks because it's so many counties away, the state attorney general's opinion applies to us down here, too. The problem, of course, I mean, it may have an impact on trying to reopen clubs like the Pacific Coast Cooperative. If
exactly.
If special use permits requirements are bullshit, then it's time for, you know, the city to realize that. Of course, I think they're also using, you know, we got forbidden zone areas where, you know, we don't want to alarm the merchants and, you know, alarm that sort of thing, because we know how dangerous those medical marijuana clubs are and how, you know, how deleterious to the health of our children.
Well, the main thing they're worrying about, even if they wouldn't agree with that, is that all the traffic coming in and out is going to produce a lot of money and a lot of criminal activity.
Well, so, you know, you think it might be the opposite, that our city, which is the city manager and the mayor, have been bleating for months about how bankrupt we are and how miserable it is. Now we have to sell the city to big hotel developments in order to proceed. You know, medical marijuana might be obviously a source of income. It might be tax and regulate is, you know, the nice key phrase being used by some folks. Pebbles, I'm gonna thank you, give you a minute or two to kind of conclude and sum up, and then ask you to call back again next time at 11:30 on Sunday next week if you're up for it.
Sure. I'm definitely up to it, and I appreciate it so much, in fact. Well, okay. So as for the new situation with the state ID card, since a doctor's recommendation is the only thing that's required, and since you would probably be giving up some degree of privacy, or at least possibly, if you were to you know, go on to a local program through the state card situation, you might be better off just to get your recommendation and go with that and have them properly posted. And don't worry about the local program. There are 123 of us that are on this program. That's all the further they ever got before they chickened out or something. You know, when they come back with the Attorney General's decision, we might be better off, because he's going into election wanting us to see him as an ally. So I don't think that's a big deal, although in principle it certainly is. They cannot seem to deal with us. So the Attorney General's position on patients does not apply to clubs necessarily. Certainly, that good opinion that just came down, it is really a different thing when you're dealing with buying and selling. With the patients, it just...
So it doesn't necessarily give a green light to clubs to try to challenge undue restrictions on the citywide level?
Yes, I think it could give them some basis for challenge, and they should do it. They should study it and see if where they think it might best fit. The main thing is the background checks. If they're in the commercial zones, and those are under the police, and it should be under the health department, because it's a health issue, you know for sure that some cops in the cities aren't going to like what they see in a dispensary, and they're going to go in there and seize those patients' records, and they're supposed to have the records on hand. So, I mean, access is drying up all over the place, and that's the place where access to most patients exists.
Well, we'll get some access to you next week, hopefully.
Okay.
And Pebbles, again, for people who want to get in touch with you between times or get, you know, benefit from your information, how can they find you?
Info@pebblesmmpu.org. Pebbles@mmpu.org would be the best thing.
Pebbles@mm as an M&M, P-U,
Medical Marijuana Patients Union, .org.
Right, .org.
And the number is 707-964-YESS, Y-E-S-S. And believe it or not, we call people back.
I'll expect my call back when I call you.
All right, you'll get it.
Thanks, Pebbles.
Bless you. Bye.
Bye-bye. And... again, the number is 707-964-YESS, Y-E-S-S, or pebbles@mmpu, Medical Marijuana Patients Union.org. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, and www.freakradio.org. If you hear some sounds in the background, it's a fan. We're trying to cool things off in here, probably for more reasons than one. But we actually have some equipment problems. We've had overheating equipment, and we're trying to make sure things cool off. And my apologies for any difficulty people have in hearing, but that's the situation. In the studio with me, coming up shortly, is Becky Johnson, my producer and controversial subject recently. But before we do that, a very quick interview with a man from the streets who wants to express some concerns about an incident with the police. We're talking with a regular SAFE member, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, who's a bard. And I'm going to hold off on getting that phone call. I'll take that phone call in a moment. But let's give Dennis an opportunity to express his thoughts. Dennis, let's see if you got you on the right mic. Say something.
Hold on.
Say it again.
Hold on.
You got it. Okay, so Dennis, what's the deal?
The first thing I want to say is, haiku was I ere I saw you, Kaya. And then we can get on with it. Yeah, Monday night, the 5th of July, I was playing a flute duet with a random stranger on the sidewalk near the intersection of Cooper and Pacific when apparently the ebullient energy that we generated through our musical duet was such that somebody from off in the distance thought it was some kind of a brawl or something and summoned the officers from the Santa Cruz Police Department. I immediately settled into a seated position because I didn't want them to force me into a seated position as they had done back on April 7th when I was mistakenly identified for a suspect and so on and so on. I have been brutalized three times through the arrest procedures and interrogation procedures of the Santa Cruz Police Department, three times in the last year and a half, and I'm getting really tired of it. The last few days I've been limping around town. Something happened to my left leg. My entire torso was sprung by the concussion against the sidewalk, and so on and so on. And I'm going to go through the normal channels of the law. Apparently what the police are trying to tell us is they don't intend to abide by the law in such cases. The law does not allow for such use of force in effecting an arrest. They have not yet learned the proper verbal procedures for accommodating a suspect or an arrestee and getting such a person to in their own terminology, submit or acquiesce to an arrest. In the first place, they don't wait for responses to their instructions and immediately go into the strong-arm tactics. I have discussed this with Sergeant Warren Berry of the Santa Cruz Police for about 20 minutes, and I'm sure he's been thinking about it. We haven't had a second talk about this. I talked about it with the lieutenant, Steve Clark, who read me my Miranda rights in the jail garage and tried to let him know of some of my views about this kind of behavior on the part of ostensible city employees who are ostensibly directed by the citizens of this city. Now, I'm not technically a citizen of this city. My mailing address and voting precinct are up in Davenport, but I'm in town a lot, and I don't want to have to fear the police or to consider them my implicit enemy, but they apparently think I'm their enemy because they don't treat me like a friend, that's for sure. I think that's about enough, Robert. I've said what I can say in the time you've allowed me, and I thank you for allowing such a guerrilla visit, as
indeed,
it were.
Indeed, and the guerrilla is here.
Yeah. Guerrillero.
And if you want to talk to Dennis directly about this, he'll probably be at the Wednesday night SAFE event.
Give you a much more sure thing. I have started the Bomalokian Society, which is based around the writings of Norman O. Brown, as a centerpiece for conversations that will range everywhere. And I have taken to being at Pergolesi's every Tuesday from 5:30 on in the Elm Street side in the patio. If you want to come and talk to me about anything, beginning with Closing Time, that wonderful book by Norman O. Brown that nobody can find a copy of, I'll be there. Pergolesi's from 5:30 on till sundown.
Hey, thank you, Dennis.
Thank you, Robert.
All right. Now a little music and then on to the next segment in our show.
By that, you never understand why my fears had such a hold on me. All I knew to do was cry. I got high,
told myself the time had come to seek a different prize. When I feel my patience wearing thin, I stop and tell myself again that I'm just too anxious and my heart of my life when I find you. I don't worry where the future might lead.
I know you're out there.
I know you're out there.
And I know you're waiting.
And I know you're waiting.
And I know you're just.
And I know you're just
what this lonely heart.
In Harmony with the Homeless, and that was the Best Days of My Life. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 and www.freakradio.org, and I'm Robert Norris. In the studio with me is my producer and co-worker Becky Johnson, who was the subject of vigorous discussion and debate on Thursday, and the issue which I originally raised was sort of a broader issue, which has to do with my concern about there being, issues of both miscommunication between activists, exclusionary reactions, mistrust between activists, censorship, some feel on one side, on the other side, betrayal. That issue was raised where numerous concerns were raised in the course of a long discussion. I had in the studio with me at that time Linda LeMaster, and a number of people called in and gave some sincere concerns, which specifically dealt with you, Becky. Welcome to the studio. Hi.
Hi.
Let's see. Let's get your mic up here.
Clever. Don't leave me a mic.
I may have to cut your mic off, yes. Mm-hmm. So, Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, is a group we both belong to. We've been working on for a decade, working with for a decade. And Huff passed a resolution expressing some concerns about a proposal to declare your non-membership here with the Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective. And indeed, that seemed to be the understanding of many of the people, everybody but me, in fact, in the room in the last meeting. And also a further proposal that was considered to ban you from the studio and from the airwaves. And I know that you've already been had your what is it, your email blocked, your ability to post stories blocked.
My IP number has been blocked at santacruzindymedia.org.
Right, but you are, of course, able to post through me, and nothing that you've posted through me, which, when I quite openly assert this is one of your stories, hasn't been removed. First,
I am heavily censored and curtailed from normal participation with the Santa Cruz Indie Media website in what I call an act of censorship, of hostility, of completely bad process, and in violation of the own goals of Santa Cruz Indie Media, which is to provide an alternative forum for people to not be limited by having to express their views through corporate media.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we touched on the Santa Cruz Indie Media concern, and of course, one of my personal position on that has been, I think that more speech is better than less speech. But, you know, on behalf of Santa Cruz Indie Media people, who probably speak for themselves, or may or may not, I don't know what's going to happen with that.
What people need to understand is that the exact same people who banned me at Indie Media are the people who are trying to basically exclude me from the Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective. I want to talk a little bit about membership. First off, you know, this is a kind of an anarchist organization, the Free Radio Collective.
Becky, can you back up just a little bit, because we were talking about Indie Media. Can we kind of start, because that's sort of where this started, right? It started with Indie Media?
I'm saying that you really have to look at the issues at Indie Media in order to understand what's happening at Free Radio, because I'm not accused of having done anything at Free Radio that anyone's upset about. No one is saying that I have committed hate speech on the air on Free Radio. No one's made that allegation. And my membership, I think, has more to do with whether I'm allowed to be at meetings where they're going to discuss me. If people can glom together and say I'm not a member, then they can exclude me from the meetings where issues revolving me are discussed. And you know, that's just bad process.
Well, again, I'd like to go back to, well, maybe we should avoid the Indie Media issue now for the moment, since you seem to want to talk about the Free Radio issue.
Well, they're intertwined, and I think right. We can kind of go back and forth, especially since the exact same people who raise these issues at Indie Media are the ones who are raising them with Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Well, yeah. But of course, it's not so much the people. I think more it's perhaps you think that, but isn't it? It's also the issues themselves, I guess, that are of concern to people at both these groups. I mean, there is a obviously. I think that the origin of all this, for me, to some extent, is the fact that you take a radically different view. Some would say a radically right-wing view.
Some would call it right-wing, but, you know, what does that mean?
Pro-Israeli government view on the issue of...
A pro-Israel position. Not
which you
necessarily,
would call pro-Israel.
You know, which you call a pro-Israeli government
right,
position, you know, that's not accurate.
Right. Well, I have my own way of speaking, and you have yours. So, but given that situation, I guess the issue that Indie Media people who spoke to me, and I guess have also spoken to you, have told you that they regard some of what you do as racist or hate speech. And this revolves to some extent around your involvement with the DAFCA website, the fact that this is a sort of a...
No, you're mixing apples and oranges here, Robert. My involvement with the DAFCA website is one issue, and my issue of what I actually posted on Indie Media being called racist is another.
Okay, I appreciate that. Let's separate these issues. And of course, the thing is this: I really want this to, as much as possible, and maybe hard to do, but I think we're going to try to do it, revolve around not a discussion of the rights and wrongs of the particular issue, which has to do with what should be done around the West Bank and Gaza, and is the Israeli government acting properly?
The Israeli-Palestinian conflict,
right.
I think, is the bigger issue that where this debate has come in, where sharp differences
right.
have been aired. And I do take a very different position from
you do.
What especially certain Free Radio Santa Cruz programmers do.
Right. See, my concern about this is sort of a broader one, and it was brought up in the conversations with Linda LeMaster last Thursday, which is that can we in Santa Cruz have activists with a variety of viewpoints on an issue, some you know seriously opposed, and at the same time work together on other issues? And some activists in this community are saying that they won't work with you, they can't work with you, and they feel so strongly about that that they want to, they're so worried about your, this is what was said at the last, you know, conversation, passing on information to, and I mentioned the DAFCA website, but I guess it was, we also mentioned.
Is anyone complaining about anything that I posted at the DAFCA website under my own name?
I don't know. I'm just.
I haven't heard anything.
Uh-huh. But I know that I've heard some concerns from people who called in on Thursday that there is a concern that they feel insecure with your having information about, say, the personal stats of people at Free Radio, the personal stats of people at Indie Media. Are you? And I'm not asking you to defend yourself. I'm saying that is this in your mind something that you're likely to do? I mean, do you feel? Are you so angry with people at Free Radio that you would be interested in subjecting them to harm? I mean, what's
speaker?
Sure, yeah. Go ahead. Give me a reaction to this.
People at Free Radio, I do have a great deal of information about activists in Santa Cruz and at Free Radio and other organizations as well. I mean, I've been an activist for 10 years and a journalist for 10 years, and I have lots of sources and everything. People have nothing to fear from my having that information. I'm not going to use it in any way that is going to hurt anyone or cause harm or in any way compromise the work that they're doing. In fact, I would say that the only thing that people have complaints about are the things that I've said very openly and publicly, whether I posted them at Indie Media or I've written them in some other media or on the DAFCA website or spoken them on my television show. Those sorts of issues that I've raised very publicly, those are the issues that Indie Media is trying to suppress. And not, I shouldn't say trying to. They have successfully suppressed that. They, starting in about March of 2005, my posts started getting censored or deleted. And when I complained about it, I never got any response in any kind of official way from the Indie Media monitors about why my posts were being removed or censored. And this was a new phenomenon for me. I'd never had anything removed prior to that, and you know, never felt I came even close to violating the Indie Media guidelines.
There are two things about this. One is that these are posts about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, not about, let's say, homeless issues or police abuse, right?
Almost exclusively on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
And also, in the course of this, since I'm not getting any callers, I'm trying to fill in a little of the reflections on this. In the course of these deletions that happened, there was also some dialogue on Indie Media, people who were, some of them, Indie Media.
I don't know who those people were. They all used pseudonyms or anonymous names.
Right.
I had no idea
right.
if
whoever,
they had any authority to speak.
Right.
Or
some people claimed, and indeed without revealing their names, that you were being deleted because they felt your commentary was either racist or...
They said horrible things about me.
Right.
They someone posted a whole thread called Becky's Brain, which I thought the whole thread should have been dumped the minute it was posted. I mean, it's just a personal attack, and having Indie Media used as a personal attack mechanism is just wrong. It's a violation of the spirit of Indie Media, which is supposed to be an alternative news media that the people put out. And, that includes when people post articles that the community can post comments on it, good, bad, or otherwise, whether they like it or dislike it or they think there's something inaccurate. And that's all I ever did. But my posts were censored because they disagreed with certain individuals who felt that they should have a monopoly on the opinion being allowed to post. That's a complete opposite of any kind of free speech or freedom of expression or a marketplace of ideas or even a democratic principle where members of the community weigh in and discuss things. And you know, I think that IndieMedia is a great website and forum for that sort of thing. But when a little cabal of four or five people can decide to violate their own principles, violate their own rules, enforce them vigorously against one person, completely ignore them at other people, and then never produce a single example of so-called racist speech. You know, this is an abomination.
Here we have a phone call. Before I answer it, I just want to take a deep breath and hope we can hear everybody on this, and we'll see how we're doing. Hi there, caller. You're on Free Radio with Robert and Becky.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify about a number of Becky's posts on Santa Cruz Indie Media.
Please.
That were removed.
Uh-huh.
Who's this?
Becky's posts were often
removed.
Is this
an anonymous caller?
Hang on. I'm sorry. Caller, do you want to say who you are or not?
Well, why don't I make my point first, and we can move on from
sure.
there.
Sure. Okay. Go ahead. Please, go ahead, caller.
The posts that were removed were consistently removed because they violated the basic guidelines and policies of Santa Cruz Indie Media, usually because we felt that those posts violated that the posts were either racist or amounted to a form of hate speech. And when people violate those policies at Indie Media, those posts get removed, not because they're from Becky, but because they violate that policy. And it's regardless of who posts it. If the post was otherwise sort of on the right or on the left or anything else, when they violate those guidelines, they go away. Now, as it happens, when it comes to talking about the Israeli-Palestine issue, when Becky posts, she often violates that. She often delves into issues that the way she says it, what she says, many people find racist.
Can you give an example, caller?
Well, I can't pull it up right now. I should. One thing I would want to point out. If you give me a...
I
will call back later.
Sure, please
I will
do.
Try and find those things.
I'm not trying to shut you down. I just
bring
want
them up.
Just asking.
The other thing I would like to say is Becky feels that issues at DACA and IMC are not related. And I think they are somewhat related.
Can you please tell people what either... Well, maybe I should ask Becky what DAFCA is so people who don't know what it is can... And then you can tell me, caller, what you think it is. DAFCA, Becky, what is DAFCA?
DAFCA is a non-governmental organization that... it's mostly a website.
What does DAFCA stand for?
Oh, it has an acronym, but... The more common meaning is a Hebrew word for in your face, which I think is kind of amusing. It's sort of like getting huffy is in
right,
English.
What's the content of DAFCA? What is it involved with?
It's an organization. It has kind of a focus on U.S. campuses, but it's primarily to counter the anti-Israeli and, to a lesser extent, anti-American points of view that are raised on U.S. campuses.
And, caller, what's your understanding of DAFCA?
Well, DAFCA works closely with David Horowitz and Front Page Magazine, an extreme right organization and individual. Particularly, DAFCA's main person, Lee Kaplan, works directly with David Horowitz. And that's part of the reason they talk about working on campuses, that Front Page and David Horowitz's sort of focus as well. I think one of the things that really gets me is Becky Johnson is the official representative of the DACA organization for Santa Cruz, or I guess technically for UC Santa Cruz. And what really offends me is part of DACA's literal, like, when they explain themselves, here, I'll pull it up so I don't misquote anybody. DACA, it's not coming up. in Dafka's description of themselves, the group that Becky is a representative for, one of his things in describing himself is, let's face it, the Arabs are simply too primitive. This is an organization that groups all Arab peoples into one stereotyped, hateful version of what Arabs are. And it for me, it harkens back to sort of the classic, like, lowbrow racism. It's really ugly. And that's who Becky Johnson represents.
Can I comment on those seven words?
Are you finished, caller, for the moment, so she can respond?
Go for it.
Go ahead, Becky.
Okay. I noticed that you went to the Dafka website and you found seven words that were part of a sentence, part of a phrase, and then you've used that as your sole example to show that Dafka is a racist website. You mentioned David Horowitz, who has nothing to do with the Dafka website, except for Lee Kaplan does occasionally post some of David Horowitz's articles on the Dafka website, but David Horowitz had nothing to do with forming the Dafka website. Lee Kaplan no longer works for David Horowitz. He did for a while, for a time, I think about a year, he did work for him. He no longer works for him. And you know, you're going pretty far range. You're saying that my posts on indie media were so racist they had to be removed, but you can't come up with a single example, nor has anyone at indie media come up with a single example, except for these seven words that you found on the Dafka website, which I did not write.
Becky, are you an official representative of Dafka?
I am, and I probably agree with 97% of what's on the Dafka website. That doesn't mean I agree with every single thing, and I certainly do not agree with your interpretation or extrapolation from those seven words that Dafka, that means Dafka is a racist organization.
Well, how would you describe those words?
For instance, the London bombings that just took place were described as, an abomination, they certainly weren't described as primitive.
Becky, will you address the words that are on Dafka's website?
Sure.
You are the official representative.
Yes, certainly. And I have talked to Lee Kaplan about why he wrote that. I even posted that explanation on IndieMedia where it was promptly deleted.
That was more racist diatribe.
Hang on. Hold it, you two. Time out for a second. I want to read the entire paragraph from which that quote comes. Is that okay with the both of you?
Oh, please do.
Becky, is that okay with you? I have the Dafka website here.
You're going to just pick that one paragraph. Huh?
Well, let me put it this way. It has about seven or eight sentences, and it gives some context for what's being
said. Well, I just want to make one sentence here before you read that, and go ahead after that.
All right.
And that is that, do you think that the practices of beheading or honor killings or suicide bombings or murder of children in their beds, do you think that those are primitive practices?
Becky, I think you apply them selectively to certain
I
groups.
I apply them to
the
people who are doing that.
Wait.
You ask me a question and I'm
sure.
responding. Or you apply them very broadly to groups that you make some stereotype
I do not
of,
do
like
that.
Arabs.
I do not do that. And you have not provided a single example
okay,
where I have
let
done
me,
that.
Let me,
who
let
are you suggesting engages in those activities?
Beheadings? When was the last time you heard of
who
a Jewish beheading
in
a Palestinian?
Hang on. I think I'm catching the drift of this from you two. I think what the caller may be suggesting is if you are suggesting that Arabs, as a generic group, are to be associated with these practices, that is something that many might construe as a racist statement. Am I accurate in that, caller?
Yes, absolutely.
So I'm asking you directly, Becky, are you suggesting that Arabs as a group are linked with these practices?
Suicide bombings, beheadings, honor killings are
Arabs
far
as a group.
More
yes,
common
the,
in
yes
Arab
no.
countries well, than they are in other parts of the world.
Well, but are you suggesting that Arabs as a group of people are connected with this? That is to say, I'm trying to put it as clearly as I can.
I'm sure that there are lots of Arab people who abhor these procedures. In fact, I've had them, two of them on my television show,
oh,
which
God.
Abhor these procedures.
No,
right, but you're not really. I want to get a direct. I'm mad. The I'm sorry.
Well, you trying
my
to
anonymous a, caller?
You're
I apologize.
Trying to
all right,
I'm
I don't
racist.
Care.
The question is, are Arabs as a group more prone to primitive practices than, let's say, I don't know, the Bush cabal or Americans in the White House? Or,
oh God, that's.
In other words, what I'm saying to you is. To talk about a group of people as Arabs, rather than, let's say, as maybe, I don't know, the PLO leadership or the Syrian regime.
Okay, when I'm talking about Arabs, I'm talking about the 22 Arabic countries. They have a common language the Arabic language. They have a common religion of Islam. And they do have common Arabic culture, which does have some very unseemly aspects to it, such as beheadings, suicide bombings, the recruitment of children into combat positions, encouraging young children to throw rocks, that sort of thing. I'd say that is common to Arabic countries and does not typify, say, the Israeli people.
Whereas in the U.S., we recruit children to fly F-18s and drop weapons of mass destruction on villages.
Children? You're talking about people who are 18 or older, aren't you?
Mm. Any way you want to look at it. Because we only recruit people who are 18.
So
that's different from, say, Palestinians, where they recruit 13-year-olds.
I'm going to get off that issue to get back, to the pertinent point that I
Thank
think
you.
The caller is making, which is the concern that if you speak about a group of people generically in a certain way.
I don't do that. I haven't done that. And the caller has not provided a single example where I've done that.
Okay, well, let me look at this DAFCA website, which you represent, and see what. Let me read this paragraph, which concludes this sentence. And tell me whether you agree yourself or disagree with it and what your thoughts are. Is that okay with you, caller?
Please, yeah.
Okay, hang on here. Make sure our system doesn't blow up on us at the same time as it overheats. let's see here. Sorry, I'm having a little trouble here. Let's see. This is actually in the middle of DAVKA. Sometimes, I'm going to read a little bit more. It's spelled DAVKA in English, D-A-V-K-A. As many means in Hebrew, it refers to the period when the tribes of Moses and so forth and so on. DAFCA's purpose is to enlighten the non-Jewish community on our campuses and nationwide to the lies of the Islamic Arab fascists on our campuses, as well as fellow Jews who are not as effective as they could and should be. We do so in order to truly help Israel in this Oslo war and against the world's attempt to dismantle the Jewish state. The UN is corrupt and controlled by dictators. America is Israel's main line of defense, and Israel is America's main line of defense in the totalitarian world of the Middle East. And here's the paragraph in question. And in spite of a lack of funds, here we are. In coming months, we will expand nationwide on our campuses to help Israel and educate everyone to the real goals of the Palestinians, quote-unquote Palestinians, parentheses, Arabs, end parentheses, and Arafistan, meaning like Arafat, Arafatistan. Arafat, of course, was the former head of the Palestinian Authority, the Palestinian Authority. Simply put, a Palestinian state, quote-unquote, would be a recipe for disaster, not just for Israel, and against any concept of freedom or democracy in the Middle East, even for the Arabs, but for the West as well. At this writing, Palestinian opinion polls show 88% prefer violence against Israel. The smuggling of weapons such as the Khanin A weapons ship proves such a state can never be demilitarized, and the continuance of Yasser Arafat, the world's biggest terrorist at its helm, is just insanity. Here comes the sentence. Let's face it. DAVKA, the Arabs are simply too primitive to make any lasting peace, and until they adopt democratic principles and adhere to laws against violence, as in any civilized society, there can be no secure peace with them. Among their own, those who recognize this have feared to speak out for fear of their own safety. DAVKA, now that is changing. That's the sentence you quoted from, right, caller?
As you can see, it mentions that there are people who speak out against this. That's Arab people who speak out against these practices. Dafka, nor Lee Kaplan, nor I think all Arabs are bad or subhuman or lacking intelligence or any such thing. That's not our position. It's never been our position. That quote was read. That's an editorial that Lee Kaplan wrote, and he's posted there.
Becky, it's not an editorial.
I'm not sure I agree with him about the fact that a Palestinian state would be a disaster. That's his position. I'm not convinced that that would be true. You asked me to say if there was something I agreed or disagreed with it. That's what I'm doing.
I'm sorry. Wait, caller. Go ahead, Becky. Is there anything more on that?
When he talks about primitive or uncivilized, or not ready
for democracy, first off, look in those 22 Arab countries. Where is there a democracy among them? And if there is no democracy among those 22 Arab nation states, then you have to ask, well, why? Is there something about their culture that is preventing that from occurring?
Yeah.
And I suggest that Sharia or Islamic law is at cross purposes to democracy. And especially from a point of view from women, I think it's at cross purposes to human rights in far too many cases.
Yeah.
That's
really good. And, I think we should look at why blacks are incarcerated at a higher rate in the United States. I mean, it must be something about them, right? It must be something about their culture.
Caller,
that really sounds like the same kind of argument. It must be something inherent.
But, caller, let me turn this back on you, though, and say, do you have much positive to say about Sharia and, the Islamic...
I'm not here to defend anybody's, to defend religion in particular or in general,
or some
religious fanatic but there's religious fanatics on every side I can see.
Right.
But when you start saying things like, let's face it, the Arabs are simply too primitive. Not, there are elements within the Palestinian, communities that seem to be, out of their minds. It says, let's face it, the Arabs are simply too primitive.
Well, let me ask Becky if she'd agree with that statement. Would you agree with what he just said, what our caller said, that would you find that reformulation? There are elements within the Palestinian that are too primitive. Would you agree with that?
I would never use primitive.
I'm sorry, is that...
That's ugly.
Well, you catch my drift?
I think the primitive statement has more to do with countries like Mauritania, which have... basically 7th or 8th century culture. No one is saying that these countries are in any way prepared for democracy.
7th or 8th century. Compared to what? Compared to whom? Who's 7th or 8th century?
But let me ask again, Becky. I propose this to you. This reformulation that the caller has suggested, which is saying that not Arabs are too primitive, but certain elements of the Palestinian Authority and other groups are too primitive. And let me ask also the caller to kind of wind it up, because I'm realizing suddenly we have, we should probably get in. We only got 20 minutes left, so.
Well, let's get on to the other issues that we were supposed to get to.
Okay, but anyway.
Like free radio.
Okay, would you like to talk about that? Why don't you go ahead?
Sure, because I think these two issues, they have relations.
Is this person a free radio programmer? Is he claiming to be a free radio programmer now?
They're not the same thing.
Okay,
so they are related.
Becky's asking if you're a free radio programmer.
I'm well-versed in free radio issues.
Okay.
Oh, so he dodged that question. Okay.
Well, yeah, I'm a programmer.
Okay, so go ahead.
I'm a member of the collective.
Go ahead.
That makes two out of three of us in this conversation.
Okay, and can I ask you a question then, since you're such an expert? Now, my understanding of what constitutes membership at Free Radio Santa Cruz is that you have to have a show currently on the air, you have to be current in your dues, and
where are you getting this information?
And that only members are allowed at meetings, and only members are allowed to vote. Would you agree with those?
I think you're making this up. It may be accurate, it may be inaccurate, but you're not basing this anything other than just sort of your personal
I mean, I actually think those are probably fairly accurate characterizations. I mean, there's other things too. Have you applied for a membership? And
right.
You know, but I mean, you know, there are a series. It has to be said that because you saw our dispute at the last meeting, what in fact constitutes membership? What does it consist of? When do that qualifications change? These are questions which, you know, at least for me, don't have entirely clear answers. I know others were somewhat persuaded, you know, at that time.
Robert, can I ask you a question? Did you ever submit a tape to Free Radio and have that review it and then once accepted become a member in the Free Radio Collective?
No, although I don't know that has been,
That's a rather poor example, though.
Right, I mean,
okay.
I have not. And
the reason that you haven't was that you had a show before that policy was enacted, correct?
That's my understanding, yeah. I've had a continuing show, and that people have had a sense of what my show is, and yeah,
mm-hmm.
It's been going on for a while.
And how long have I been a member of your show?
You've been with me from 1996.
Helping with a show doesn't make you a member of the radio station.
Yeah, but caller, being at 20-some meetings over the past 9 years and voting at all of them does confirm my membership.
Well, you are the only person who claims that. No one else remembers those.
No one else that was at the meeting that 7 people were at.
I don't know. Apparently, yes. Yeah, no one else remembered that. The only time anybody remembered you at a meeting was the one open and public meeting that was held just after the raid.
Okay,
some months ago. And that was the sole meeting in a long time where members of the public were invited. And other than that, people who were not members were not welcome.
Okay, I have a disagreement with you. That meeting right after the FCC raid was not an open meeting, nor does logic say that right after an FCC raid we would have a giant open meeting inviting everyone in the community to attend. That's not what happened.
I'm sorry, you're mistaken, and that's simply not true.
Let her finish, caller. Go ahead.
There were 2 people at that meeting who were not members. One was a former Free Radio broadcaster, and the other person was a man who was explained for being there. They said, okay, we brought so-and-so here because he may be able to provide a location for a transmitter, and so that's why we brought him. Other than those 2 people, everybody else at that meeting was a member, including me. And nobody said that this was an open meeting. This is something you're making up after the fact so that you can justify what you're doing, or to say that since everybody remembers me at that meeting,
well, apparently everyone else involved with the radio is making it up after the fact as well. Then they have to somehow create some sort of dodge
that says that this was a special exception meeting, except for that didn't happen, did it?
You're making things up. Sorry. That's convenient.
Any other point?
The first open meeting ever in free radio existence. Give me a break.
Hang on. Any other points, caller? Because I want to allow other callers to speak. But go ahead, please. I mean, I don't mind actually having you.
Becky hasn't been a member in the past. She hasn't been an active member of the collective. She's never been accepted as a member. She's never applied for a show. Yes, it's true
that, Robert, you've never gone through the process
because that was because you were an open and active member who had a show, who was on the air all the time, who was clearly part of the group. Becky wasn't and hasn't been. And the fact that you know, where things were hosted at times also doesn't qualify. And by the way, I should just point out that all those times you say you were at these meetings and you voted, well, we've never voted.
What?
Okay? There's no voting. We don't vote. Thanks.
Thanks, Matt.
Yeah.
Well, there's a consensus process and people wiggle their fingers. I mean, maybe that's what I'm calling voting, where, you know, people indicate whether they're in on something or they're against it. You know, I mean, he's quibbling about the word vote, but I certainly, in fact, the process of applying the tapes for having a membership consist of sending a tape in for programmers to review and consider membership. I was at that meeting where that policy was drafted. That happened at the What Is Art, a meeting that took place at the What Is Art location. and we discussed that, and I helped to vote that in, or consents it in, as the caller is quibbling with me.
We have another call. Hi there, caller. You're on free radio.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Am I on the air?
You're on the air.
Okay. I have a few comments.
Sure. Go ahead.
Are
you a programmer, too,
yes,
caller?
Yes, I am. My name is George. I have a show from 3 to 6 on Sunday.
And what's coming up on that show, George?
Well, I'm going to have Bill Fletcher on talking about Africa and the G8 and Haiti.
Okay.
I'm going to be also joined by Ali Starr. We're going to be talking about Art in Action, a camp that's coming up for teens in late July.
Okay.
And I might be joined by some other guests to talk about the International Criminal Court. It's the one-year anniversary of their decision on the wall that's being built in the occupied territories.
Oh, occupied territories.
Becky has a question for you.
Yes, George? Becky, yeah. Probably thinks that's part of Israel, but it's classified internationally by international laws, occupied. I want to make a few comments, if I may.
Okay.
I think, Becky, can I speak? Or
You can, George. The problem I have is that we have only 10 minutes left. And
okay,
and
well, maybe then I can make a few points and get off.
Can she ask you a question first, and then you kind of include that in your points?
I haven't even been given a chance to speak yet. I'd prefer to do that first and
okay,
then answer questions.
Okay, but go ahead.
I think Becky clearly reveals her racism with a few of the statements that she made. The simple fact that she would defend the comment about primitive is... that in and of itself is very telling. And statements like Palestinians recruit 13-year-olds, prior caller pointed out, that statements like that are applied collectively and broadly, and she's been doing it throughout the hour here and revealing her racism quite clearly. And I agree also with what Matt had to say in regards to saying that Arabs have a common culture and religion, as Becky mentioned a minute ago, that condones suicide bombings, beheadings, and some of the other things she described. Not only is that racist to make that statement, but also it's completely untrue to say that Arabs or the Arab culture or religion is any more violent or any more sexist or any more repressive than any other religion. And there's clear examples, including in our own country, of extreme violence, extreme repression. In fact, many people around the world view our government as the number one terrorist in the world, and I think that that's very valid. And for anybody to make the statement that somehow Muslim countries or Arabs or, you know, have a more violent culture or a more repressive culture or a culture that, you know, it's just absurd. For one thing, it is a broad and collective statement, and for another, it's not true.
So
there are no more violent than the Christian fundamentalists that are running this country, that are wiping out people in Iraq, that are decimating Fallujah, and they're no more dogmatic and no more violent than what the Israelis are doing in the occupied territories. And your statements are racist. You reveal yourself to be a racist through those statements. That's one thing I wanted to say. The other thing I wanted to say is that I've been involved at Free Radio for over 6 years, and I haven't seen Becky at more than a couple of meetings. The only one I can remember for sure is the meeting that was just discussed, which was an emergency meeting which took place the day of the raid, and in which three people, including her, were there that were not collective members because it was an emergency meeting that people that were not collective members were permitted to attend for the purposes of getting the community together to do something. And as far as people that are totally outside of this whole discussion and weren't even aware of it at the meeting, for example, Matt from Technical Difficulties, had no idea and laughed at the notion that Becky was a collective member, someone who didn't even know about this whole debate until he attended the meeting, and he was shocked at the suggestion that she was a collective member. She hasn't been actively involved. She is a producer of your show, and I think it's only fair that she continue to be, but she is not a collective member of Free Radio. Nobody but you and her think that, as far as I know.
George, When you started your show on Free Radio,
yes,
you,
I applied.
You,
I submitted
you applied
a tape.
With
I
your
did.
And your with your sister, correct?
Yes, I submitted a tape and I applied, and it was reviewed and I was accepted.
Right, and then you and your sister were both considered members of Free Radio Santa Cruz, correct?
Correct.
Okay, well, that's the same situation.
Well, she's
with,
no longer
with Robert
considered a member, Becky. That's
that
a very
bad
you're just shooting yourself in the foot with that example, because my sister is not a collective member of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Just because she was at one time...
She was at one time.
...had been applied and accepted, she is not a member of Free Radio Santa Cruz. She's not a member of the collective because she hasn't been actively involved for a very
long
time.
She no longer works on your show, right?
Actively involved.
George,
no,
she has helped with my show.
She has assisted with my show over the years. She has. She suggested guests. She's even come on and interviewed someone on my show from the East Timor Action Network, but she was not considered a collective member at that time.
When you first got your show, she was, right?
Yes, but she's no longer considered
and
a collective member
because
she's
no longer working on your show.
Well,
when
she has helped me with
George,
my show.
George,
yes, she has.
George, when did I stop working on Robert's show? In the last 9 years of continuous airing of Bathrobes Pierre,
when did you apply to be a member of the collective?
I was a member
of
the
collective. My sister applied to be a member of the collective.
George, I was a member 9 years ago. The policy of applying for membership was not in effect.
That's funny. Nobody who started the radio station, including Skidmark Bob, Vinny, V-Man, Matt...
Matt is new.
None of these people who started this radio station think of you as a collective member. So you can go on thinking of yourself as a collective member.
Matt can remember me
at
meetings
at
What Is Art.
Because none of the other people who founded this radio station think of you as a collective member. Okay?
Caller, let me ask you, George, first of all, Becky, did you get your question asked of our caller?
No, I didn't. I wanted to know if George was at the meeting that took place at the Rhizome several years ago, in which Jim Costner was banned.
And I don't remember you being there. Yes, I was.
You don't remember me being there?
No, but that, like I said,
I was there.
A couple of meetings in the last few years. And I will include that one, even though I don't remember you being there.
I spoke against Jim Costner being banned, and I would have voted.
You being a member, and we don't vote. We have a consensus process. We do not vote. You can block a decision, and then there'll be a very long discussion until you back off. But there is no voting.
It's a consensus process.
Yes, there's no voting.
People come in. They sit in a circle.
So you couldn't have voted at
they
that meeting.
They put items. They put their. They go around the circle and they say, "Well, do you have any items for the agenda?" And
the point is that we don't vote, Becky. You
I know the procedure.
The
I've been to 20
Table,
meetings.
Did you block the decision with Jim Costner? Did you block it? I don't remember that.
No, I stood aside.
Okay, you stood aside, but you didn't vote.
Well, you know, why are you saying I'm not a member now when I was obviously a member then?
Hey, folks, let's not... I mean, I think there's a dispute over... I mean, I think both of us understand that your point, caller, is...
Like I said, I don't recall you being at that meeting.
Right, okay, so...
You may recall it, but I don't, okay?
So there's obvious...
So that doesn't mean that I wasn't there. That means your memory is faulty.
Okay,
when everyone in the collective doesn't think of you as a collective member,
but everyone in the collective, there are like 40 people in the collective. There were 7 people at that meeting. Come on.
Why do you want to be a collective member when you don't do anything? You don't come to meetings and all you do is produce Robert Norse's show. What is so important
Excuse
to
me.
You about
you think
considering
I
yourself
haven't
a member
done
of this
anything
collective?
For free radio? Are you saying that I haven't done anything for free radio in the last 9 years?
What I'm saying is you have not been an active participant in decision making. You have not attended meetings. You have not done anything except produce Robert Norse's show, and yes, you hosted the transmitter for a couple of months. And we appreciate that, but that does not make
Second
you a collective
time,
member.
George.
There are a bunch of people hosting the transmitter right now. That
George.
Does not make them collective members.
George, that was the second time I had the transmitter
on
my
property.
Yeah,
you and Robert had it for a long time. I remember that. Yeah.
And when the FCC came by in 1999, they had a paper with my...
That's much appreciated. That does not
make
you a collective member.
They had my name on that.
Okay, that's much appreciated. That does not make you a collective member,
The
though.
FCC... subpoenaed my phone bill.
I understand all this, Becky.
And now you're saying I'm not a member?
The transmitter right now.
When did my membership come into question?
Nobody at Zombie is a collective member. They hosted the transmitter for quite a while.
George,
they were hosting it when it was raided. That doesn't make them all collective members of our collective. That's an invalid point.
When did my membership come into question?
I appreciate the fact that you house the transmitter. It does not make
you
a collective
member. When did my membership come into question?
Oh, quite a while ago.
Like when?
Around the time of the raid.
last September?
There was questions about whether or not you were a collective member, yeah. And nobody thought you were.
Well, you know...
So what I want to know from you is why you can't just produce Robert's show and be happy with that. You don't attend meetings.
I don't
want to
have
second-class status. You don't have any active involvement in our collective.
Status,
why are you so adamant?
I have full status here as a member of this collective and full status as a member on this show.
Why are you so
George,
adamant about being a collective
George,
member? Why don't
George,
you
because
Robert's
I'm the one
show,
that they're trying to ban.
Anyway.
You're talking over each other.
That's all she does anyway. She produces your show. Why is she so adamant about being a collective member when she doesn't do anything else anyway?
George, I think she's giving you her thoughts.
That's really pejorative.
Hey, okay, but one of the problems...
Not accurate,
one of the problems I have here, of course, and it's impossible to completely referee this. I thank you for calling in, caller. I am at the end of my time, and I know you're probably, I'm sure, have other concerns you want to raise
on
this
issue. Well, the last thing I want to say is this has nothing to do with her opinions, okay? It has to do with the fact, and even if it's decided that she's a collective member, there will be a motion to kick you out. Even if it's decided, which it won't
speech?
Be, because you violated a very fundamental
hate
policy of this radio,
radio
station by turning over personal information about collective members to people outside
totally
the collective.
Overblown.
That's against our policy, whether it happens on or off the air. And to make it even worse, you turned it over to a personal friend and a colleague of yours named Lee Kaplan, who brags publicly about providing that information about activists to the U.S. government, to the Israeli government, for the express purpose of disrupting activist movements, and who has personally infiltrated and bragged about it, activist groups. That's your friend, that's your personal colleague, who in his statement on Dafka's website, which you are a member of that group, said that Arabs are primitive, okay? That man turned that information over to David Horowitz. You made a statement on Indie Media that you knew that that information was being given to David to correct his blacklist. That is a violation of free radio policy, a very, very, very serious violation as well. And that alone has gotten a lot of other people kicked out of this collective. There's been people who've lost their shows for giving personal information about people either on or off the air to people outside the collective. And that's a very serious violation. And you did it. Not only did you do it, but you gave that information to somebody that you knew, boasted and bragged, about taking personal information about activists and giving it to the Israeli and U.S. governments for the express purpose of disrupting activist movements. And you participated in that. And if you tried to defend this by saying that, oh, I was just correcting information that they had wrong on their list, I would rather they had the incorrect information. I would rather the likes of David Horowitz had the incorrect information about me and others on his blacklist, not the correct information. That's a very pathetic defense of what you did.
Caller, I... apologize for having to
even if there's a decision
break in
made
here.
That you're a member of the Free Radio Collective.
Caller.
The fact that you did that is basis to kick you out. That was a serious violation of our policy. Extremely.
Okay, like,
and not only
I'd
that,
like
it was
respond.
A serious violation of activist
I'd
culture
like
in
to
this
respond.
Town and around the world. Okay, this is like, you don't do that.
I'd like to respond.
Okay, so
it has nothing to do with your opinion about Israel and Palestine. You can hold whatever opinion you want.
Okay,
you can
caller,
say whatever you
you're
want.
You're repeating yourself.
Caller.
You can say whatever you want about Israel and Palestine. It has nothing to do with your opinion.
I
it has
have
to do with your
apparently
action.
Not on
hey,
Indie
hey,
Media.
Hey,
it has
hey,
to
hey.
Do with your action. I don't have anything to do with Indie Media.
Hey,
I'm not talking about Indie Media.
Hey,
I'm talking about Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Okay.
What have I said on
okay,
Free Radio
it.
Santa
your
Cruz that's verboten?
Okay.
Really, give me a break.
Okay, hold it. I think this is an important conversation, but there's no time for it now, unfortunately. I apologize to both parties. Caller, I'm going to give Becky a chance to sum up, and then this is going to have to wait till another time. Thank you for clarifying the point you've made, and you've made it pretty emphatically. And
I know what she's going to say. She's going to try to downplay what she did.
Well, let's let her say it. She has a right to speak.
Go
so
ahead,
let's
but
do
I'm,
that.
I know what she's going to say.
Okay,
she's going
so
to downplay what she did. And what
okay.
I'm trying to
right,
one last thing. When you correct somebody like David Horowitz and Lee Kaplan's information, you are assisting those people in undermining our movements. Okay, you're assisting them in forming a blacklist. You are one of them, and what you did was a serious violation. Thank you for letting me talk.
Sure. Thank you, caller. Bye-bye. Your comments, Becky.
Okay. David Horowitz's so-called blacklist that they're talking about, I mean, this is really quite different from, say, the House of Un-American Activities blacklist which was done under government auspices with, you know, people subpoenaed and told under oath that they had to give the names of their friends and their associations. And that was really a horrible thing. So this, you know, calling it a blacklist, that's a very heavy language to use. But really what it is David Horowitz is a journalist and a columnist, and he's printed his opinion, this list or database of, it's called the Guide to the Liberal Left. I had nothing to do with the creation of this list. I think the list is stupid. I think it really is pointless. How was anybody harmed by having anything posted on this list, irregardless of my involvement or lack of involvement? What actually happened was a single instance, which I have been fully told people about and have been very open about, in which case my Lee Kaplan, who has been on my show several times, told me about the list. I didn't even know of its existence. And I went to look at the list to see who from Santa Cruz was on it. And I saw four names that I knew, and I said, gee, look, there's a whole bunch of misinformation on here, you know? I mean, it says Scott Kennedy is a former mayor, and he's actually the current mayor. It was at that time he was the current mayor. And one of the things I said, oh, and George Cadman is not a man. And he says, oh, let me know what's incorrect so I can I'll get a hold of David Horowitz and make those corrections. That happened one time. It happened under very casual circumstances. Maybe I used poor judgment by giving that information to Lee Kaplan. At the time, it didn't seem to be any big deal at all.
Is it going to happen again?
I have already contacted Lee Kaplan and told him.
We're out of time, Becky. Is it going to happen again is the question I think some people are concerned about.
I contacted Lee Kaplan and I told him that under no circumstances would I ever supply any information to him for David Horowitz's website, that if there was any question about it, and listen to all Free Radio Santa Cruz programmers can be assured that I'm not going to provide any information to David Horowitz's website. I don't know David Horowitz. I've never met him. I've never had contact with him. Why I'm being branded by having some loose association with him is just the most ridiculous thing. Are we saying that anyone who has any associations with anyone in any kind of right-wing organization that they can be banned from Free Radio Santa Cruz? That's crazy. Does that mean there are no Republicans can be on Free Radio Santa Cruz as members by their guidelines? This is insane. This is a witch hunt. People are using bad process. They're trying to ban me from meetings by claiming I'm not a member, which is also ridiculous. Most of the people that are trying to ban me have been members shorter time than I have, including George. Certainly Matt has been a shorter time.
We have one brief comment, and I hope it's really brief, from a caller. Go ahead, caller.
Hi. Actually, two comments, because I happened to listen to just what was said. This is the V-Man, of course, and I'm not ashamed or embarrassed to admit who I am and that I've been involved with Free Radio for a long, long time, longer than Becky. And two comments. First, just now you completely contradicted yourself. You stated that you thought that the Horowitz list was a stupid list. You said that just now on the air, and then you went on for about 4 minutes explaining why you corrected the information. If you thought it was such a stupid list, then why did you feel the need to correct the information? That's point one. Point two, Becky repeatedly stated in her call with George in that dialogue or whatever that she kept asking the question, when did the issue of my membership come up? She asked it repeatedly. Well, here's a little history lesson for folks out there. It did come up in 1998. You have your dates wrong. As a matter of fact, the FCC visit was in May 1998, not 99. And the issue of your membership came up at a meeting in What is Art in February 1998, when Free Radio was off the air and all the equipment was boxed up in public storage space. And Becky came to the meeting and offered to rent us space to broadcast from. And the issue came up at that meeting whether you were asking to be a member. And you said no. and that was decided that you were not a member because a lot of people felt uncomfortable with
who
you being a member.
That
and we had a long discussion about it at that meeting.
Who else was at that meeting? I certainly don't remember these events the way you're stating them.
There was like 20 members there, and most of them have moved on, left town, whatever, but there are a number of people that are still in this collective, including myself, who were at that meeting. And you were at that meeting as well, and it was explicitly stated and discussed that you're not a collective member, Becky.
You know, that never happened, Vinny. Vinny, you're making that up. That's bullshit.
Okay,
that never happened.
Okay, there's a factual...
You say it never happened.
There's about five other programmers
that are still active in the collective who will verify that.
Obviously, you're trying to ban me after the fact. It's quite obvious.
There's obviously...
Despite the evidence.
It's a factual issue, and Vinny's going to present some factual evidence.
Vinny is also the person who banned me at Indy Media,
Becky,
so he's not exactly an unbiased person.
And Becky, you're also yourself have the option to provide some factual evidence too, and I presume you'll be doing that.
I think he said something like that on your show, how he had personally censored my
Unfortunately,
messages.
We're way out of time.
I'm sorry to the next program. I really apologize.
It is 1:10. Indeed, it's a volatile and obviously an issue that provokes a lot of strong feelings. And I appreciate the callers for calling in to clarify what their sense of things are. Becky, I appreciate your coming on and speaking about the issue and obviously what is a face of a lot of serious criticism and hostility.
You know, I really think that there's hope for if we could get some mediation going, we could take this out of the public arena, go back into private, have conversations face to face, sort this out, and I think we'll come to a conclusion that we'll all agree on. But that hasn't been done.
Okay. You say you're willing to do that?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I would like to see that happen as well. I don't know if folks on the other side are prepared to do that, but I would certainly like to see that happen. And the reason I brought this up, of course, is because, frankly, I think it's been a festering issue and one that needed to be aired. Thank you for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. Thanks to the next programmer, The Feminist Menace, for allowing me to menace her feminist menace. And tune in again next Thursday for more of Bathroom Spears Broadsides, 6 to 8 in the evening. And please check out the Sleeping Band Forum coming up at the SEIU on Wednesday at 7 o'clock at Mission and Locust. And you get to hear Tony Madrigal in person. Think of that. Thanks again.